Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to what I hope will be a rousing Tuesday evening. I'm Bob. This is the Horn. Scintillating hour of listening to Mark Levin not have the top of his head skull blow off, listening to the bug spray crazy ravings of the right-wing lunatic. And you know what? They are all over, Sunshine. They are everywhere. I mean, the roaches are out on the floor. It's dark. You flip the lights on. And they count on that. The right wing counts on the fact that when you flip the light on, when you see all those roaches scurrying around the floor, the first thing is your hands go up to your head, and you can't help it. You kind of go, I don't care how tough, how mean, how brave, how bold you are. The first thing you do is you and in that time that you lose cringing, you know, full body cringe and just, you know, the sort of St. Vitus dance kind of thing that, in the time it takes you to recover from that, they scurry back behind the baseboards and make more roaches. They count on it. It's part of their strategy. It's the way they are. Because they are repiglickins. And they behave in a set and predictable fashion. You can almost set a clock by right-wing hatefulness and insanity. Sadly, there are some Democrats that you can put on that same clock. Does me no good to mention that, but it is without a doubt the daggum truth. And we'll get to that, I imagine. But right-wing creepiness? Oh, let's see. I got a few examples of right-wing creepiness handy. Let's go to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Oh, yes, Tulsa. Haven of wing nuttery. Bastion of conservatism. Land of, Tulsa, that's Bart Cop country. And he's the one that calls it K-drag. You know, knuckle drag. I would think Bart Cop would be an authoritative source on this. I haven't seen this story on Bart Cop. Maybe I missed it somewhere along the way. I'm hard-pressed to believe that this has escaped his laser beam focus. Like here in Appalachia, folks in Oklahoma are plumb hung up with their guns. They like their guns. They're going to keep their guns in their house in case they ever have to defend themselves against the government. Never mind the fact that they kept their guns in the cabinet, got all dusty and rusty and stuff, and the bluing started getting pitted. For 8 years while the Bush administration assaulted our civil liberties, you know, when those goons might have come in handy. But no, they didn't want to get them out because nobody, you know, no Democrat was having consensual oral sex. That's when the revolution, next president, we're gonna rise up, gonna have a revolution next time we catch us a Democrat president having consensual oral sex. Gonna rise up. So in Oklahoma, just as it is in West Virginia, it is important to know how to use one's firearms safely and effectively. I refer you to a young 13-year-old fella, looks like a good, upstanding young man, by the name of Lane Dunkley. Lane Dunkley. Lane Dunkley's grades weren't the best, but there was one thing in the world that mattered to Lane Dunkley. Lane Dunkley loved his grandpa. He loved his grandpa, an aging man, and the one thing in the world that Lane Dunkley, through the course of his 13 years, and I'm very sympathetic to the wants and desires of a 13-year-old boy, being as how I have one. And when the, I don't care whatever, what it is, a candy bar, bottle of pop, new pair of pants, the new tennis shoes, whatever, when it gets into the head of a 13-year-old boy, it don't just go away. Something has to give. And the one thing in the world 13-year-old Lane Dunkley wanted was to go hunting with his grandpap. That's what he wanted. And Lane Dunkley was told he could, in fact, go hunting with his granddaddy if he brought his grades up. And, you know, that's a powerful incentive for a 13-year-old boy. That time out in the woods with one's granddaddy is the kind of stuff that stays with you the rest of your natural-born life. And who knows, perhaps beyond. Lane Dunkley applied himself to his studies. Lane Dunkley brought his grades up to an overall B-plus average. I reckon he's likely, he's 13 now, I reckon he's likely a seventh grader just like Ferg. So he brought his grades up so that he could go hunting with his granddaddy. And the next step after bringing his grades up was to make it through his hunter safety course. Now, see, in the South and in Appalachia and in other parts of redneck America, getting one's hunter safety card is right up there with other rites of passage of the male of the species, the bar mitzvah, the whatever it is that Muslims do for each other. Rednecks get their hunter safety card. Okay? Because learning to handle a weapon and being able to be trusted with a firearm, truly, that is a rite of manhood in redneck America. And I don't necessarily use redneck as a pejorative. I'm one. Lots of good liberal progressive folks I know are rednecks, and so I don't use that as a slur. We are, by God, what we were. What we are. That term, redneck, we all know where it comes from. From brave working people who had the guts to stand up against corporate thugs and actually take up arms against them at a place called Blair Mountain. We talked about that a little bit last night. Lane Dunkley got his hunter safety card, or went to get his hunter safety card, I should say, so he could go hunting with his granddaddy. Well, Oklahoma is a very rural place, much as is West Virginia. Lane Dunkley and his father, Daniel Reddy, live in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and they went all the way to Broken Arrow for the hunter safety course that is required before an Oklahoman can get a hunting license. They got to the appointed location, sat down, and that's when everything went sideways. Kel Wolf was the teacher. Kel Wolf, according to the Oklahoma Department of Wildlife Conservation, had been a volunteer instructor in hunter safety for a long time, probably 15 years or more, and the quote, from what we've heard and observed, had always done a great job. He worked with the kids really well. Well, not that night. He didn't work with the kids so well. Everybody sat down in the room, and Kel Wolf asked if any of the students at the class, because, you know, it's not just all 13-year-olds, there's adults there, too, getting their hunter safety, asked if any of the students in the class had voted for Barack Obama. And Daniel Reddy, Lane Dunkley's daddy, he's an ex-Marine, by the way, raised his hand. And that is when Kel Wolf looked at Daniel Reddy and said, Barack Obama is the next thing to the Antichrist! And you and that boy of yours, just get on out of this room. Get out of this room. I don't want you in here. That Barack Obama's next thing to Antichrist. Get on out. Ex-Marine Daniel Reddy said he wasn't about to do that. And Kel Wolf responded and said, I ain't going to teach no liberals. And I'll cancel this whole daggum class if you don't get out. And teach no liberals voting for that Antichrist Obama. Like I said, when the lights go on and you stand there and you see these little right-wingers scurrying about, they count on the fact that you're going to be horrified for a little bit before you can do anything about them. Now, okay, you gotta give credit where credit is due, and in this case, credit is due to the Oklahoma Department of Wildlife Conservation, whatever it is. Oklahoma Department of Wildlife Conservation. The next morning, there was a phone call at the Reddy household, and Lance Meek, who is the Hunter Education Coordinator for the Oklahoma Department of Wildlife Conservation, called and asked Mrs. Reddy and Mr. Reddy what could be done to make it right. Mrs. Reddy said the only thing we really wanted was for my son to be able to take the hunter safety course. And there wasn't another one in the Tulsa area with an opening for the rest of 2009. So Lance Meek did the right thing. He arranged for a private hunter safety course. And Lane Dunkley will get his hunter safety card, so that Lane Dunkley can, in fact, go hunting with his granddad. Now, I don't want to put too fine a point on this, but this is a perfect example of the hypocrisy of the right wing.
Well, we believe in family values.
But only if you're a right-wing family.
Well, we support the Second Amendment Constitution.
But only if you're a knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing limbaugh listener. This Kel Wolf creep literally was willing to stand in the way of one of the most sacred southern rural bonds that there is.
going out in the woods, a boy going out in the woods with his granddaddy hunting. I would hazard a guess that the statistics would be the same whether it be Oklahoma, West Virginia, Tennessee, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Arkansas, Missouri, Kentucky, Texas, Oklahoma. I would warrant that the statistics would be the same. If you just started surveying men in rural communities and some in the more urbanized ones, and just asked them point blank, give me one of your fondest childhood memories. I don't think you'd go more than 10 men before you heard my granddaddy used to take me fishing, or my granddaddy taught me to hunt. Now, this is not the place for the conversation with the PETA people about whether or not hunting is okay. This is about the sacred bonds of family. Fathers and sons, grandfathers and grandsons. I still have in my head the stories that my father told me about Pa Davis taking my dad out to the smokehouse on a Sunday morning with all the meat hanging from the rafters. Meat that he had killed. And saying, "What do you want for breakfast, boy?" By the time my dad got to the end of his life, I think that was the fondest memory he had. And for very good reasons. But For Kel Wolf, right-wing, Limbaugh-listening, O'Reilly-watching, Hannity-loving freak. For Kel Wolf, that bond did not matter a damn dime's worth if the people seeking his services were liberals. Yeah, use that word, liberals. See, we beat them in the last election, and we beat them fair and square, but they ain't done. And until we understand that they have got to be knocked to the ground, kidney kicked, gut stomped, head kicked, squished, nutted, and utterly destroyed, the right wing will come back again and again and again. When they are in retreat, you do not stop to go through what they left, like the boys in Butternut did when the Yankees left Bull Run. The new boots will wait. You run them to ground, and you make sure that they cannot fight again, because there's always a Kel Wolf out there. There's always a right-winger, a wingnut, a conservative freak who will spit on family values, spit on tradition, and do anything in his power to further his own bigotries. See, Kel Wolf, even Kel Wolf realized he was living in 2009, so he had to call Obama the Antichrist and not that other word that lives deep within the dark recesses of what passes for his soul. That's the place where we begin tonight. It is by far, far and away, nowhere near the extent of the right-wing perfidy. And like I said, there is some Democratic perfidy as well. But other things went on today. The kangaroo court at Guantanamo Bay
that was set up to receive a signed document from some of the concentration camp prisoners there. Got that document. It was ordered to be released on Monday. And five Guantanamo prisoners accused in the September 11th, 2001 terror attacks, oh please, 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 the September 11th, 2001 attacks, they didn't attack any terror, they just attacked, put in writing a defense of their actions. They said that the operation in which they were engaged was blessed. They said September 11, 2001 was great. And they said that the accusations levied against them by the kangaroo court in Guantanamo amounted to a badge of honor. They said, quote, "You are the last nation that has the right to speak about civilians and killing civilians. You are professional criminals with all the meaning the words can carry. Therefore, we will treat you the same. We will attack you just like you have attacked us, and whomever initiated the attacks is the guilty party." This is a response from Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, one of the men who was waterboarded and tortured on the advice of John Yoo, Lawyer Bidey, Donald Rumsfeld, and the rest of the war criminals. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed by now probably doesn't have much mind left to think with. You've seen the photographs of him after his torture, after his waterboarding. He said the United States is the terrorist country number one in the world. They also said, go figure. I mean, they said that they are, jeez, it's these language moments. They said that they are terrorists to the bone. Yeah, I couldn't resist that, sorry. Our religion is a religion of fear and terror to the enemies of God, the Jews, Christians, and pagans. With God's willing, we are terrorists. We are terrorists to the bone. However, they said some other things, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed did, this document, these pages. "Your end is very near, and your fall will be just as the fall of the towers on the blessed 9/11 day. We ask from God to accept our contributions to the great attack on America, and to place our 19 martyred brethren among the highest peak in paradise." I'd think it would be cold up there, but never mind. Peaks are usually cold. They cited some verses from the Quran. They cited the Israeli occupation of Palestinian and Lebanese land. They said the United States has links to attacks in Palestine and Lebanon by providing political, military, and economic support to the terrorist state of Israel, which in turn is attacking unarmed, innocent civilians. Now, terrorist state I take issue with, but Israel did in fact, you know, attack unarmed civilians. There's really no getting around the slaughter toll from the vile ethnic cleansing that was undertaken for a while in Gaza. They're charged, among other things, with attacking civilian objects, and deliberately causing grave bodily harm. In response, they said, "Is it us or is it you?" among other things. And, you know, this is tough for us to get around. They noted the civilian slaughter we engaged in when we dropped the first and only atomic devices used thus far on civilian populations in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. With regard to hijacking charges, they said, if you do not respect the innocent in our countries, then we will do the same by exposing you to danger and hijacking in the air, at sea, and at land. I'm looking at an artist's sketch of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed from his kangaroo court trial. Or not trial, but war crimes charges. This guy does not look sane. Frankly, this artist's rendering from Getty Images looks a lot like the artist renderings in, frankly, Idiocracy. And this has about as much of a much to do with what we understand as constitutional justice in this country as the trials in that movie. And as despicable and loathsome as the acts of September 11th, 2001 were, and all the hell and harm that they caused, it's hard to sit there and hear and read phrases like, is it us or is it you, in terms of attacking civilian populations? How many civilians are dead since March. How many civilians are dead, lo, yea, verily, over the course of these last six long years in Iraq? How many civilian wedding parties have we rocketed in Afghanistan? How many oopsies have we had there? Some say as many as a million. It reminds me of the Roman occupiers of Palestine taking 10 civilians for every legionnaire killed. Only we've done it with a much more zealous, robust approach. Blowing up entire homes in Iraq, lest we forget. Blowing up entire homes in Iraq when Iraq had absolutely nothing to do with September the 11th, 2001. And we have not begun to pay the moral, the ethical, or, if you want, the karmic price for what we've done. We will be paying for a long, long time. And who is to say but what history will look back and note that by virtue of the way that the Bush administration responded for eight long, tormented years, responded to the attacks of September the 11th, 2001, how can we say with any certainty that history will not look back and say, they did take down the United States? The seeds of the current economic woes this country is experiencing, those seeds were sown in many places. Those seeds were sown in Glass-Steagall, which has happened, the repeal of Glass-Steagall, which happened before the turn of the millennium. But there were seeds sown in the ashes of September 11, 2001, as well, when George Bush said, support your country, be patriotic, and go shopping. Yeah, that's right, George. America ran out and ran up its credit card debt. in the middle of a recession. Got to remember, his presidency started on a recession and ended on a recession. Just like the Reagan-Bush years did. Start with a recession, end with a recession, with lots of looting and plundering in the middle. It's how they are. It's what they are. And we're back, I suppose, to the issue of cockroaches. And we got lots of cockroaches tonight. I got a couple of stories from Texas. Little curl your hair. I got one from Missouri. Not going to do you any good. Engaging in discrimination against transgendered and transsexual people. I got one of those tonight. I got right-wingers the sleazing and smearing people who happen to be homeless. Oh, I got lots of stuff. I got a surrender. I've got an instance of surrendering, the Obama administration surrendering to the nasty, nasty right wing. There's plenty. And then there's the little news right here in West Virginia. And I know, and I'm really grateful for the fact that as a function of this program, you have become interested in what goes on here in the hills and hollers, this little microcosm of the rest of the nation. Now I got a home front story for you. Just a little story of what it's going to be like for people in one of the most destitute, most desperate places in the United States to continue simply to survive. I got all of that. Your calls as well. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Either one works. Email rolls into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, at gmail.com. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Bad. 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 They all stay satisfied. I want to tell you, pretty baby, what I see, I make my own. And I'm here to tell you, honey, that I'm bad to the bone. Bad to the bone.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Before you say, holy cow, what the is that? That is the Southern West Virginia Silver Honor Band. Live recording from last Saturday night. Hear that cymbal keeping perfect time back there, that with those 16ths? That's Ferg. I'm sorry, I am the proud papa here. So, I just had to share that. It seemed to work well, the coming out of a break that started with George Thorogood, Bad to the Bone. I gotta tell you, it was kinda neat. I was talking to Ferg afterward, and I said, I was just asking him how he felt about it and what he thought of it and everything. He said, well, the band director told me to improvise. So I did. And, you know, it wasn't just those 16ths all the way through. You know, he did a little stuff here and there, and that's kind of cool. I'm raising a drummer. Oh, dear.
What's that line from that Jackson Brown song? And the drummer swept that girl away, or some sort, some such. I think that's from the Running on Empty album, and the tune is Rosie? Yeah. But anyway, I just thought I'd share that with you. I thought you'd get a kick out of it. Now, let's move around a little bit. A little Enviro news. Down to one of my favorite places on earth, Mobile, Alabama. The Alabama Port Authority yesterday, you got to learn to read the date lines. Come on, Bob. The Alabama Port Authority temporarily shut down a section of the McDuffie Coal Terminal because of a coal spill into the water yesterday afternoon. They only did it, of course, not because somebody was down there at the McDuffie Terminal going, "Holy crap, there's coal spilling into Mobile Bay. This is terrible. This could toxify. This could kill a fragile wetland ecosystem." No, this was a function of the brilliant work, I am told, of South Wings. You've heard about South Wings on this program before. They fly to where the coal-based disasters are. They flew over Kingston, Tennessee, and they've flown over Mobile Bay. South Wings got the video into the hands, Mobile Baykeeper, Cassie Calloway. See, Baykeeper, Creek Keeper. Remember our Creek Keeper buddy, Hurricane Creek Keeper John Wathan? Well, this is an effort of Mobile Baykeeper Cassie Calloway, who said they don't have a permit to discharge coal into the water, and that's a violation. And to see the stain, you can see the spreading black stain coming away from the coal terminal as the filth goes into the waters. Cassie Calloway also said, "Coal is not clean. Everything about it is a mess. It can cause mercury problems in the water." Mobile Baykeepers have already filed a complaint with the Alabama Department of Environmental Management. Meanwhile, Port Authority spokesperson Judith Adams was shown the video, and she said, "Well, who knows what that is? We don't know what it is." She was asked if the situation was alarming. She said, "No." But despite her professed ignorance, the terminal was shut down partially because of this spill. South Wings does amazing work in conjunction with River Keepers, Bay Keepers, Creek Keepers, in conjunction with Coal River Mountain Watch, Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition, Highlands Conservancy. They do brilliant work. What it boiled down to was that coal dust was getting into the water because clumping coal, Judith Adams later admitted, was falling off of a belt on the west side of the terminal, and they had to shut it down for about 4 to 5 hours while crews identified and fixed the problem. See, that's one of the things about our coal-based approach to things. We let the problem happen first, then we identify it, and then we attempt to remediate it. It is a constant it's a constant closing of the barn door after the horses are already gone, if you will. Big golf claps. to Mobile Bay keeper Cassie Calloway and South Wings. Coal is, in fact, a disaster. Coal's a disaster wherever it goes. Coal's a disaster in here in West Virginia, in other parts of Appalachia. Coal's a disaster in Kingston, Tennessee. It's a disaster at Widows Creek in Alabama. Coal is a disaster on Mobile Bay. And it turns out, coal is a disaster on the Potomac River. The Maryland Department of the Environment made a little announcement today. They had a little coal ash problem themselves. By little, I mean 4,000 gallons. 4,000 gallons of toxic coal ash dumped into the North Branch of the Potomac River in Loup, Maryland on the 8th of March. They didn't find it until the next morning, the 9th, yesterday. 4,000 gallons. From what is called, get this, 4,000 gallons dumped into the North Branch of the Potomac River through a dime-sized hole in a pipeline. So that dime-sized hole opened on March 8th, dumped all March 8th, and was not discovered until the morning of March 9th. And the Maryland Department of the Environment says approximately 4,000 gallons dumped. Might have been 6, might have been 8, might have been 10. I mean, if the TVA effect is in play, it may be 40,000 gallons. We don't know. National Resources Defense Council writer Pete Altman says, I don't know how long it'll take for the spill to reach D.C. proper. That's right. D.C., like everywhere else, like we remind you here on the Horn every night, D.C. is downstream. And Pete Altman said, I don't know how long it'll take for the spill to reach D.C. proper, but it's a hell of a way to send a message about how much we need to regulate the handling of this stuff. And he notes, all the more reason to thank the Obama administration for announcing plans to propose federal regulations for coal waste. Of course, I guess I'm a radical. I don't want to regulate coal waste. I want to eliminate coal waste. I want to eliminate multi-billion gallon sludge dams, 14 of them in Boone County, West Virginia alone. I want to eliminate them. I want to start on that yesterday. I want to give working Americans good jobs, eliminating those, good union jobs. The jobs involved in eliminating the sludge dams around West Virginia would employ half of this state. The question is, who's going to pay for it? Well, we can't make the coal companies pay for it. Well, I didn't know that in communism. Okay, we'll put together a little stimulus package to clean up this filthy mess and eliminate it forevermore. No, that'd be communism, too. It's all communism. It's, if it doesn't have coal dust in it, it's communism! That's right, President Obama. You, my good man, are downstream, too. President Obama, your beautiful daughters are downstream, too. President Obama, we are all downstream from the depredations wrought by our insistence on continuing to burn this filthiest of all fossil fuels. Yeah, but coal makes for cheap electricity, Bob. Oh, does it?
Yeah, cheap electricity. Lots of cheap, like 52% of electricity in America comes from coal, Bob.
Does it now?
Yeah, it does. And that's why we can have cheap electricity here in West Virginia.
Really? Okay, let's check in with that cheap electricity. Do let's. Because it doesn't quite work out the way you might expect. Here in Wild Wonderful,
West Coal, it keeps the lights on in West Virginia.
Remember? Okay. Here in West Virginia, Appalachian Power and Wheeling Power have told the Public Service Commission that, by God, they are not getting rich enough. In the middle of a recession that may damned well be a depression, Appalachian Power has filed with the Public Service Commission of West Virginia for an 18.5% rate increase on my electric bill. And everybody else's electric bill. Oh, but that's not all. That's just for the end of this year. This public utility, this utility regulated, supposedly, by the state, wants an 18.5% rate increase this year. Next year, they want a 14.5% rate increase, and they want a 13.2% rate increase in 2011. Tell me again why we can't have some damn windmills on Coal River Mountain. Because, shh, don't tell Don Blankenswine or any of his other coal thug pals. But, well, this is gonna be a little bit of a shock to those Coal Keeps the Lights On people. But I recently got a note from Rory McElmoyle, who is the technologist, if you will, with the Coal River Wind Campaign, and he had taken a look at the rate increases that Appalachian Power wants and will get, by the way, and will get. And by the time they get to their rate increases in 2011, which is a, let's see, let's go back, do the math real quick. I'm sorry, I'm not good at this on the fly. 18.5% plus 14.5%, 19, 20, 33% plus 46.2%. They want a 46.2% rate increase that amounts to $442 million. They say that it's necessary to recoup what the electric company spends for, oh, what? Coal!
I got the cheapest electricity in America, Bob!
What they pay for coal. And that's the funny thing. Coal's supposed to be a real big bargain right now. Remember I had a story for you a couple of nights ago about how they're laying off coal miners and mountaintop removers and all of those people because the market price for coal has gone so damn low that they can't hardly bear to sell it anymore? Remember that story? Yeah, you do. I know. But the rising price of coal is going to necessitate a nearly 50% rate increase for me, who isn't getting a 50% increase in my income, nor anybody else in West Virginia. Yeah, by the way, these rate hikes are coming to a power company near you soon. They're laying off because the price of coal is down, but American Appalachian Power wants to raise coal, raise power prices because the price of coal is going up. Somebody has got to get with these coal people and get them on the same page, because the level of lying is getting a little bit embarrassing. The price of coal is either up or down, but it ain't both. But anyway, Kanawha County Commission President Kent Carper said, it's just staggering. We have a significant amount of people on a fixed income. How are people going to pay their bills? Appalachian Power, American Electric Power, responded, we don't care. We want the money. Actually, what they said is, we are very aware of the state of the economy and the fact that many of our customers are facing financial difficulties. This is from a spokesperson named Dana Waldo. Where's Waldo? Over at the power company, trying to get more money. We will work with the PSC and Consumer Advocate to find a solution that will allow us to recover our legitimate costs of doing business while lessening the burden on our customers. Bear in mind, if a 30 mile an hour wind blows past my house, I lose electricity for a day. You know this because you've actually heard it happen. You know, beep, beep, beep. You know, that when the power supplies are beep, beep, beep. Do it. That means that coal didn't keep the lights on again when the wind is blowing. Wind? Wind? When the wind is blowing? Wait. Oh, my. Could it? Wind. Yeah, because, see, what Rory informed me is that by the time Appalachian Power gets its rapacious rate increase for the coal prices that are actually down that they claim have gone up, in 2011, the domestic price for electricity will go to 11.1 cents per kilowatt hour. Shh. Don't tell Don Blankenswine, like I said. Wind power currently costs about 9 to 10 cents per kilowatt hour, and they don't have the corporate welfare coal does. Solar is 10 to 15 cents per kilowatt hour, or thereabouts. Of course, this has nothing to do with the price of coal. This has to do with American Electric Power, of whom Appalachian Power and Wheeling Power are subsidiaries, trying to gouge as much money as it possibly can out of the system before the Obama administration can start getting serious about the filth that is coal-powered electricity. Because they're starting to talk about carbon caps, and that's going to mean cost to the electricity providers, which, you know, they'll happily pass on to consumers, but they want to make sure that they've padded their nest before they pass it on to us, so they can continue to make obscene profits. This has nothing to do with the cost of coal. This has everything to do with the cost of Gucci bags and the Italian loafers, lobster lunches, and spiffy German sedans, which are in turn purchased by the fat cats who run these power companies, you see. Now, see, Rory tells me that a carbon capture and sequestration plant costs three times more than new wind development, and even more than concentrated solar development. Carbon capture and sequestration plants also require 20 to 40% more energy to operate than conventional plants, you know, the ones that are pumping the filth into the air and the water. In other words, coal, as Rory notes, is killing itself. Rory says, I can foresee a day in the near future when coal electricity will cost 20 to 30 cents per kilowatt hour minimum. And this ain't just West Virginia. It's coming to you, too, one way or another. So we either get serious about wind and solar now, or we will find ourselves damned well wishing that we would have. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
Hey, you know, you're really hitting some bullseyes here. I just kind of, you know, and you're exactly right. I mean, you know, as you were saying it, I was thinking it. I'm like, well, if it's happening to Bob, it's going to happen to everybody.
And it's going to hurt worse.
And it's going to hurt even more. I mean, it already hurts. Because, you know, I don't know, what do you pay for your house per month?
Well, with everything added in from what we run the studio on, a bunch.
All right, so we're going to say in excess, and I just have this number because this is pretty much the average of a lot, was roughly around $2,000 per year or more.
Yeah, more actually.
More, okay.
Now, and to be fair, we pay extra because we also pay for wind energy.
I do the same. Yeah, they let you buy a couple of credits for 12 extra bucks or whatever it is, right? You get, like, you know, and you buy kilowatt hours, you know, you buy, I think I'm on two. And I the reason I'm on two and the reason I'm sitting there, because 2 kilowatt hours is a damn, that's a boatload of energy. Now, I'm sitting here looking at, for my house, I was looking at solar panels that would provide 2.5 kilowatts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is, we're going to talk about getting serious. Well, let's get serious. Because right now, people are paying. You pay it anyway. You're putting in all this money, and you get nothing in return.
Bingo.
Now, to purchase, now, you talk about investing, and this is a stimulus. This is the kind of things that, this is what this country needs, and I know you're going to see it.
Electrolytes?
You can buy a solar, well, hang on. You can buy a solar power, a panel kit that you can adjust. You know, you probably have to manually adjust it, but they have automated systems if you want to spend a little more for the pitch of the earth, you know, as it goes back and forth into the seasons. So you kind of adjust them and they can be more efficient. You can purchase one of these systems for the not that bad of a price of $20,000. And you're going to provide, hang on, this is like an infomercial. You're going to provide 2.8 kilowatt hours, which is more than you'll use. Okay, and essentially this is hooked up to the batteries in this system, just panels and an inverter. Now, when you're not purchasing, it's federal law that if you're providing power to the grid, well, that same coal company would have to pay you to do so. Okay, and why I'm saying this, and this is because you might still use a couple of watts here and there as the month goes on. But what's going to wind up happening is your bill is going to negate and balance itself into relatively numbers of $6 per month until you're, you know, because there's still some backups and at night and things like that. Now, because then at the same time, the energy that you're not using and you're putting back into the grid, they have to purchase it, but they purchase it for far less than you would have to purchase it from them.
Right.
But anyway, I did all the math, and I sat there and I figured it out that within, okay, and I was even saying with paying money in, you know, I was pretty conservative with my numbers, but I could literally pay for the system. Now, the system that was $20,000, the state of Wisconsin here, they give me a 25% tax credit to the purchase price, and there's a federal government, and this little thing was extended for everybody in this country, that they would do 30% of the cost price, meaning that the whole cost price, you're really only financing around 10 grand. All right, so I figured that, and in about 5 years, you know, roughly putting in about $2,000, you know, in terms of paying for the hardware, within 5 years, 6 years, you would literally have the system paid off, and the panels themselves are useful for upwards of 50-plus years. Now, once you pay that off, and you got $5,000, and then after that 5 years, and you're not sitting there putting the money that you put into these coal-powered power plants, and you're essentially off of their poisons altogether. Imagine how much less energy would be used, how much less pollution would be produced, how much less if everybody started doing this. I know it's one of those things that you got to make a jump and do it, But my God, can you imagine? I mean, that what a beautiful, you know, people used to have those mortgage burning parties, and we're not going to see that for a while. But, you know, when you pay the mortgage off, boom, you burn up the papers, and the house is yours.
Yeah.
And I remember watching a documentary, and boy, that would be a damn good feeling to be completely paid off and have no problem.
Oh, wouldn't it?
Oh, it is. What a beauty that would be. And now, while that's a feasible thing, it would certainly be even more feasible if you could actually have a power system put in, paid for, within 5 years, and you have a 20-year mortgage. And let's say you start out at the very beginning of 20 and da-da-da-da-da. Well, if you're not putting in that power bill, you could pay premium? You got your interest premium, and then you got – so you could pay your premium on top of – so more money would go to your end equity, and you would be paying off principal. And if you're paying off principal on your loan, on top, because you have extra money now that you're not putting to the power company, you could pay your mortgage off how much faster. And my God, if these people, even if they made mistakes and they got the house with an extra bathroom and it may be a jacuzzi tub and maybe a sauna, maybe they really couldn't afford it. But however, they weren't paying such extreme prices. I mean, if you give everybody like a 5-year, you know, window and special financial rules apply, and you kind of keep the system, I don't know, instead of worrying about, you know, piling more people into the raft, you worry about maintaining the integrity of the raft or something like
yeah.
that, or getting people's...
Well, you know, let's expand on this a little bit, Albert. First of all, and, you know, this is a topic that's got, you know, whole nights written all over it. First of all, one, you know the old rule of the street corner drug dealer. Hey, kid, the first one's free. Right?
Mm. Yeah.
The sad thing about Appalachia is that the people who most desperately need to switch away from coal-fired electricity are the poor.
Yeah.
And no bank is going to touch them.
Yeah, and that's and
we need a federal loan guarantee program, kind of like student loans. Really, really low interest loans. And, you know, once upon a time, it's not like I'm talking about anything new. Those things existed once upon a time.
Yeah. I mean, how else are we going to rebuild the...
Yeah, I mean, because Poe folks don't need a tax credit. I mean, I'm not being critical of you. I'm just pointing out a reality. A tax credit doesn't matter to somebody who, is making, you know, $20,000 to $25,000 a year with a family of four. Because it's, well, you know, do you see what I'm saying?
I'll tell you what, as far as taxes are concerned, as long as I'm not paying in at the end of the year, I'm fine. I think I've mentally trained myself to not even look at that money. That money that if it comes back, comes back. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But as long as I, at the end of the month, don't have to pay. Yeah, because when you do make a paycheck to paycheck, you know, you can't, my brother does this all the time. You can't, like, count money that you don't have yet. You know what I mean? Like, you can't sit
yes.
there, and that's one of those lessons I learned. You can't just sit there and go, oh, I'm going to make all my taxes are going to be $3,000 or whatever they're going to be, and I can go and buy this and buy this and buy that and buy that. Like, a lot of people, I think, do that. I mean, God, if your taxes are $3,000, well, $3,000 is a nice down payment to get a loan for
yeah.
one of these systems.
And so what I'm getting at, we need low-cost loans for homeowners. We need the government to fund this.
Yeah.
And nobody's asking for anything for free. Just the government get behind the loan program.
Well, boy, think about what that would do to look. We have two places nearby me. It's NCR and Cummings. And they make, like, parts for, you know, for automobiles and diesel trucks and this and this and this and that. Well, these factories are laying people off, and they're huge. And
yes.
you could fit the machinery that it would need to take to spin silicone wafers in such a place. I mean, you can do these things. The machines and the fabricators are, you know, they're not quite what the Denebs and the I-7 cores and all that are made on. You know, so they're not quite, you know, into the billions of range. But, you know, these machines are probably $100 million. But, you know, if the people are getting loans for the thing, and then, you know, you'll be able to sell the peanuts, and, I mean, you would be able to make profit.
There is a whole economy that is wrapped inside this thing. It's like something that if you just crack the nut, or anybody who's ever seen the bud of a rose, it looks
yeah.
tiny. but there's all this beauty that bursts forth from it. And that's what this can be. There, you talk about greening American homes. There's an industry that springs up, like I've said before, that springs up that maintains that stuff.
Exactly.
And the money stays home in our communities.
Exactly. When we replace these disgustingly, hideously, disgustingly ugly high-tension power lines that run through neighborhoods and over the landscape, and we replace them with windmills, you know, there may be a little noise, maybe not as much electromagnetic radiation raining down on people and radiating all over the place. But, you know, I think, A, you not only green, you know, you need somebody to walk those lines and do their, with their little oil thing and go and loose, you know, and maintain these systems. You know, because we're going to use solar in the day and wind at night because that's when the wind blows.
Yep.
You know?
I know.
People will be walking these systems and they will be, you know, heck, it almost, a job like that would be kind of cool if you wanted to be outdoors a lot and be a pioneer, you know, because, you know, some of these systems might need some maintenance, and, you know, you never know when one of these stupid switches will trigger a failsafe and then the machine will stop working, and people will, I mean, it'll constantly be need to be checked, just like a coal power plant needs people to get the ashes out, handle all the business in terms of that, except it'll be a lot less filthy. It'll be a lot less, you know, damage to being done, and there'll be actually probably more people. I guarantee it'll probably take, well, I can't guarantee, but I would think that it would take more people to maintain a system like that because we're so balanced on making it efficient and keeping it efficient. You know, so it's a finely, you know, if we were to create a green power energy infrastructure in this country, we would need some people out there making sure that everything, all the little nuts and bolts are tight and all everything is nice and everything is working out as, you know, 100% efficient because we do consume a lot of energy. And, you know, while, you know, yeah, you can get the new utilities and the new machines that they make that are more efficient and people should probably be able to do that. And that's what I would imagine that some of the next stimulus checks are being for. But we have to do this now because, as you know, these oil companies and coal companies, they manipulate this crap to make the price go up. That's how they do it. And, you know, I think they want to see, like, you know, these coal places and these, you know, these energy companies, they want to see the old days of $300 a share. You know, and they want to be $300 a share and still produce profits and when no one else is. Because they're making their product go up, but at the same time they're saying that there's not a demand. They're just jacking up, there's not a demand. How are you going to try to say there isn't a demand? People are using energy, less energy. They're not turning their lights on. They're not running their washing machines, and they're not, you know, using a hot water heater or anything like that. How do you mean energy? Since when has energy consumption gone down? You know, it would go down if, added a renewable energy infrastructure, that would go down, but just because it wouldn't be polluting. I mean, even if we could, you know, if we could ever get fusion up and running and get it safe, boy, you know, we could actually maybe grow our economy a little bit more. But when these people are sitting here manipulating all the resources, because that's what they're doing, there's not enough coal in the market, so the price is high. Oh, we're going to have to jack up the power now. The coal companies protect themselves with shells upon shells of companies and corporations and LLCs and all this other stuff. Don't you think they all do that? The banks do that? The Vista does that? I mean, they all do this. They all sit there and they all have the same game, and we're all supposed to sit here and just, okay, maybe, you know, it's like, what's that game that they hustle people with the queen and the one-eyed jack?
No, the three-card Monte, yeah.
It's like, yeah.
Follow the queen. All you got to do is find the queen. Queen's right there. See how good you are at it? Yeah, let's play again. Played for a quarter, let's play for 50. Want to play for a dollar?
Yeah.
No, I know exactly. I know exactly. Everything that you were talking about makes so much sense. It's like putting water on crops, really. It makes that much sense. But it's a question of political will, and political will is always a question of how much will we demand. When do we get around to getting back to that business of being sovereign citizens? You know, their bosses, the guys in D.C., their bosses, us, we. And
I think we're waking up to that. No.
Yeah, I hope we are, because you know I'm mean, Albert. I've got this vision that, you know, the power company are generally SOBs. If you get behind on your bill and it's not freezing weather, and sometimes if it is, they'll cut you off.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see a day, because again, I'm venting just some general rotten meanness here. I'd like to see the day when there are thousands and thousands of people in West Virginia and other places who have solar panels who are selling to the power company. And I'd like to see those thousands of people go to the PSC and demand a rate increase on monies to be paid from the power company. And I'd like to see those thousands of people file thousands of lawsuits against the power company to get them to pay up. Because, you know, there's some essential flavors of justice mixed into this. You know, it wasn't 2 months ago that we were talking about a man freezing to death in Michigan because of what the power company did to him. He froze to death, Albert. I really want the shoe on the other foot. And that shoe begins with people solarizing and personal windizing their homes. But for that matter, there's also, you know, there's room for industrial wind too. I know a lot of people don't like it, but there's room for that. There are technologies out there that are absolutely breathtaking to me. This idea of the vertical farm, I'm still reading on it, and it's just making my head just explode. I mean, it's just blowing my mind. And I'm sitting there thinking, wow, those could work here.
Well, those are going to have to be in cities.
Right, those are going to have to be in cities, but they can be here, yeah, too, because you get a four-season growing season out of them. And they have to be near water, and there's tons of water here if we'll just stop burying the damn streams.
Tell you what, maybe those vertical farms would work on those desolate wastelands, on those mountaintop removal sites.
They would if it wasn't for the gone water.
Well, we have some pretty decent ways of cleaning water up. I mean, there are ways to clean water. It would take energy, and it would take... But I would imagine putting energy into that would be better than or more.
Yeah, it would be easier just not to do it anymore.
Well, it would be more sustainable to, you know, use solar energy that's being provided. I mean, you got to think about how many people live in West Virginia, and how many people have roofs, you know, roofs and stuff, and how many buildings have roofs. And I mean, that's such an enormous area. I mean, in terms
and
of
this is and this is how we turn around the economy. You know, we can't turn around the economy by starting to make liquid coal to run our bombers, okay? That won't turn the economy around. New missiles will not turn the economy around, Albert. Frankly, doing something for Detroit will maintain stasis, but will not turn the economy around. This is the thing. The green economy is the thing that will turn the economy around, that will turn this nation around, that will change the focus of this nation. I mean, it has such promise that it's almost difficult to contemplate. I mean, can you imagine? Dig this. Instead of oil platforms in the Gulf, and I'm just saying, instead of oil platforms in the Gulf, can you imagine building hurricane-proof wind turbines? I mean, I'm just visualizing here.
It's got to be possible. I mean, you know, here's the. Onto Dune, if you look at what they had in terms of those wind funnels, they're basically the big hoods.
Yeah.
And if you kind of, there's got to be more than one way to skin a cat. We don't, you know, we don't have to have the pinwheel type of windmills. There's a lot of ways to funnel wind. You know, heck, I remember exploring some of the caves in Guam and just feeling the wind coming out of them or going into them. I mean, you know, and that's off the water and this and that, but, you know, I mean, nonetheless, you know, caves sometimes attract some sorts of currents. You can sit there and, you know, make all kinds of new and interesting archetypes and of energy, you know, architecture and all this other stuff that literally, the things that we're going to be doing here are going to ensure if we survive for the next 1,000 years. You know, I think
the next 500.
Heck, the next 100. I mean, if we really want to get down to it, and I don't care, doom, gloom, apocalypse, and the price that we're going to pay if we don't do these things, serious. If we fail, it's serious. You know, like, we're running out of these petrochemicals. You know, we're sitting here getting gouged to death of the people that control these things. And once these things are gone, what's their big idea? I mean, I know they're gathering all this money up, and I don't know what the hell for, because what the hell would the money be worth if nobody's here to buy anything or nobody's able to make anything? You know, what's the point of having all this money, especially when it's just paper, or even worse, when it's 16 decimal points in digital world? You know, I'll tell you, if people start getting solar panels, you know, every house could be part of a solar panel union, and that's in a sense what would be the power company, a.k.a. the ones who maintain these things. You know, and, you know, I mean, heck, if you don't have any problems with it, like solar panels, a lot of people don't report a lot of problems with them. They're pretty much stable, and as long as nothing crashes into them and breaks them.
Yeah, how do they hold up in things like hailstorms? I don't know that.
Well, think about how to build it. Glass is pretty strong stuff, man. You could put a layer of really nice tempered glass on that, and it would need a meteor to break it or something like that. You need to shoot it with a gun. You know, you can make glass pretty darn strong. I mean, heck, a lot of these ones are made of plastic, and, you know, now you can print them on a dot matrix printer. You can print solar cells. Then you can put them into a transparency and put them on your own current windows of your house. If you have some south-facing windows, you can literally do that. I'm sure hooking it up and having everything else done with it would be maybe take new windows, but, you know, just so you can have some sort of electrode and wires hooked up to the grid and stuff, and I don't know how much energy you produce, but it's interesting to know that we can do these things. You know, the black silicone that we talked about, the nano layer that you had mentioned, you know, months back when we were talking about this subject.
Right, the black silicon.
Yes, the black silicone, 500 times. Now, I'll tell you what, the energy company would love to see an increase of profits like that, but can you imagine an increase in efficiency like that? Let's start seeing some more efficiency out of these guys. You know, like they said, that's the problem, man. They want to make profit. That's what they want to make profit, and they have us by the throat. They literally do. You know, they can raise their rent or enter any agreement with these people. And I'll tell you what, the biggest scam that I remember, I'll never forget this, when they're like, oh, yeah, go on the budget plan. And we're like, you know, we just
had
twin kids. Oh, my God, what a mistake that was. What a mistake. They're like, oh, yeah, we average it for the lowest cost of what it was for the last owner. And I looked at my bill, and it was no right. It was a $90 bill, what have you. And then I started, like, seeing this, you know, like, we owe them $700. And I was like, what are they calculating, the last owner in 1980? What were they calculating in terms of the cost to keep me within a budget? How are you putting me in a budget but making me pay it's just ridiculous. So we said, got off that budget plan. And, yeah, sure, the bills are a little higher per month, but at least we don't end up owing them, you know, like in hoc to them, in debt to them. You know, are they going to start charging you interest on the money that, you know, you haven't paid? And, you know, that whole system, man, this thing's got to go. We don't have room for it. It's like, you know, some plants you have to string up and keep standing up, you know, to get the produce out of them. But there's, you know, a lot of trees, man, that don't need anything. They just grow and get stronger and get stronger. As the wind blows, they get stronger. You know, there's all kinds of things, I mean, that we need to wind up doing to win at this game. You know, to sit here and be successful as a species. Because that's what the hell this is. You know, this is, we're just sentient trees. You know, that we know what we have. Trees do what they do, and trees will be here forever. Until something, you know, until the planet blows up, okay? Like Krypton.
Yes.
Trees will be here forever as on their own. They're never going to pollute their world. They're never going to sit there and, you know, filthy their water. You know, basically they have a system down that where they can literally live for hundreds of millions of years, okay? That's how we have to do. Those are the lessons that we have to take. You know, I mean, like, we have to sit there and emulate and learn lessons from nature and sit here and go, well, we need to wind up being so self-sufficient that we can survive. I don't understand. If we're not doing that, then what's the point to any of this? If we're not trying to survive and make ourselves sustainable and put ourselves in harmony with whatever system we live in, how can we ever expect to survive? You know, I mean, that's one of these problems. I mean, that's prayer meeting stuff. You know, and that's what, and one of the hurdles we have to come over is with these, you know, religionists that think that there's always got to be the end of the world. You know, I mean, and the thing is, and the scary thing is the way the human mind works is if people believe that, it will happen. Just as if people believe, and now they know that it's possible to survive, they will. I think the glimmer of hope, I mean, people, and then the things that people have survived through will show us that there can be a tiny little glimmer of hope. If people didn't know that, man, I could have a solar panel system paid off and then paying me within 5 years.
Yeah.
If people don't know that, they would never know, even have that as a goal.
Well, you know, Ben Birch sent me a link yesterday that I was looking at of a home-based wind turbine. And he can correct me if he's listening, if I'm wrong, but I think he made the remark of, I'd love to have this, but his hometown forbids it in its zoning laws.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. The minute you said that, I had the image in my mind of that documentary film, Garbage Warrior. Please, go nabalister.com or one of these places, because it's a hard documentary to find. At least for me. I mean, we're limited to what we can get. I have the internet so I can get it, and everybody listening has the internet so you can get it. And you go watch what this man has done. All that stuff's popped. He made a windmill that was putting out so much power that he had one house was powering like 20. With this one little, it was a beautiful, like a beautiful, graceful spiral, just a solid spiral that went down, and it just, you know, like one of those signs, but a little bit twisted. Like a nice, that perfect top of a soft serve ice cream cone.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
If that thing would just grab that wind and spin. He had to put this stuff was experimental, but he had to put a steel superstructure around it so it would be stable. And that's how much it was spinning. He balanced it out. He made it balanced. He put bearings, nice bearings in it, and put it to a generator and generated energy for almost 20 houses or something along those lines. And the local people came in and said, do that. Then they wound up doing all this, and they took his license away. Okay, so he couldn't even experiment with what works best. You know, like, that's the thing, is like, you know, we can say these things, but people out there have to figure out what works best. You know, I mean, a lot of that knowledge that the, you know, the Arawak Indians had with living with the land is gone because those people had genocide committed against them. You know, like, these people lived comfortably out in nature and exposed, and they did it in ways that we can certainly duplicate or mimic with industrial technology. Okay, I mean, there's certain ways that they had their layers of fur, or they had their this or that, and they had this.
It's all a matter of what George H.W. Bush once snidely referred to as the vision thing, Albert. This stuff has to be dreamed. It has to be envisioned. It has to be hoped for before it can be real. And, you know, I'm just told that there is a copy of Garbage Warrior on the way to me.
Excellent.
Which is very cool. I'll pass it around. Make copies and share it with other people who need to see it. Again, give a copy to the library, things like that.
You will cry. You will cry.
But it's all about that vision. It's all about what can be. You know, I think back to that beautiful, beautiful line from Bobby Kennedy, where he said, people see things as they are and ask why, and I see things as they could be and ask why not.
Mm.
You know, that's the kind of motivating language this country needs going forward. You know, I understand that the executives of American power want to keep buying, you know, Mercedeses and Beamers and stuff. And I'm not necessarily opposed to it. But, you know, why weren't they in this business a long time ago? We already had an energy crisis in the 1970s.
No, yep.
I mean, I was thinking the other day about the law of unintended consequences, Albert. Mm. You know, there was a lot of passion and a lot of brilliant energy back in the 70s. One of the greatest live albums of all time is the No Nukes album, of people stopping the production of nuclear power in this country, and they did the right thing. But once again, we failed to run the bad people to the ground after we won the initial victory.
Well, yeah.
Because we stopped the nuclear power plants that would have just had America glowing in the dark. But then we turned around. And, I mean, you know who was, not that they'd come out and do it in broad daylight for anybody to see, but you know who was cheering while committed liberals and progressives were stopping the nuclear movement? You know who was sitting behind mahogany desks and just clapping their pink, puffy little hands the whole time?
Uh-huh.
The coal industry.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's, goody, we'll sell more coal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's noxious little phrase, the vision thing. If, you know, we have to multitask. I mean, the generation behind us is a multitasking generation, and I hope that they apply that to the problems that we're handing off to them. Because, for instance, we needed to solve nuclear and coal at the same time.
Yes.
And solar existed back then. There was a lot of talk about solar during the Carter administration. Solar panels went up on the White House. But it's like it never got past the White House.
Oh, no, then Reagan was elected.
Boom.
You know, and then we had all that, this whole era of greed, and Garfield started coming out with them stupid shirts with the big puffy letters. And, you know, he who dies with the most toys wins.
And baby on board.
And, you know, I mean those, well, that was even, yeah, but I'm just saying there are symbols and things that I remember as a little kid reading. And I mean it was such a pervasive culture of greed that when we're sitting here looking at,
but that's the part I don't get. Wow, is this going to sound miserable? There's room for greed in wind and solar. There's lots of room for greed in wind and solar.
Well, but hang on, I think it redirects it. I mean, essentially, wind and solar is going to put more money in your pocket. And, you know, I mean, the greed of Bob Kincaid, and I can imagine you having some evil, sinister dreams of a big, you know, evil genius in some mountain somewhere. And I'm sure you might, but, you know.
There's an elevator shaft that goes down 10 floors in my evil genius castle. Yeah.
Yes, I go.
I even know the mountain I want to put it on. It's actually in Virginia, but never mind. I pass it every time I drive to D.C. It's this. Just sits there, and it's.
So don't give it away. You don't want, you know, when you do become an evil genius because you have solar panels and wind power, and you got some extra money in your pocket, you might.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah. But no. But
yeah. I mean, yeah. There's upstairs and down, and a river of beer flowing over my grandmother's paisley shawl. All of that.
I'm
guilty.
Well, you'd have more time on your hands, hopefully. You'd have more money in your pocket, and you'd have a cleaner environment with which to go spend some money that you saved by being, you know.
And then we're going to take the south-facing part of the mountain, Albert, and we're going to terrace farm it like the Incas did.
Sweet. Those are gorgeous in their own way. You ever see some of those things? Those
yes.
Those rice paddies in China? Man, that's just amazing. You know, I mean.
Andean mountains that go all the way from the top to the bottom with little sustainable terraces that fed millions.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, yeah, that's utilizing your space. That's being a tree. You know, that's being, you know, in harmony with your surroundings and, you know, adapting to it. Be it building houses on the wall of a cave or a cliff or, you know, or building terrace farms. I mean, that's, in terms of technology, that's some good stuff. I mean, these things have been, you know, they have those terrace farms. 6,000, 7,000 years old, those things. You know, people just working on them and working on them and working on them and making our own little imprint. And, you know, I mean, depending on the distance with which you can see humanity on the planet or the means and methods, you know, there was a guy, I don't remember quite where I saw it, but he was showing all the flights, the airline flights, and it was all tracked on a computer. And just, you know, follows the trails and all this other stuff. And this thing looked like a living organism in the shape of the United States. Well, all these just, it tracked all the planet, you know, and then it went through the cycles. And it,
yeah.
You know, just, yeah. And I'll tell you, that kind of stuff, when I look at that kind of stuff, I mean, because there's two ways to look at this. We could look at terrace farming, which does fingerprint on the planet, and then we can look at all these airlines in any way, shape, or form, you know, the lights at night, you know, on the planet. You know, we're making an impact, and some impacts, I think, are better than others, and for lack of a better phrase. Some of the impacts we can have are by promoting biodiversity and, you know, maintaining ecological, you know, integrity, which, you know, here, for example, is it better to take the mountains down, pile them into the valleys, or terrace farm them? Yeah, you might lose some forest either way, but your impact, I mean, you know, like the level of impact.
One has a dramatically lower impact and footprint than the other.
Exactly.
And yet, at the same time, I went looking for it. I couldn't find it. There was a letter to the editor from this AstroTurf group in Greenbrier County, West Virginia, that's opposed to wind turbines, saying, the idea of pounding 40-story wind turbines, pounding them into the mountaintops of Greenbrier County, was a bad idea when it was proposed, and still a bad idea.
What?
Yeah, this is an AstroTurf group that's a front group for CSX and the coal companies.
Pound
it into the mountaintops. Well, okay, buddy. We'll bring 3 million pounds of high explosives a day to Greenbrier County, and we'll blow the hell out of your mountaintops. Well, how would you like that better, pal? Because I get a pony is not part of this equation.
You know,
I'm a unicorn.
Well, I love looking at, you know, tree-covered mountains, you know. But, and this is one of those things I've never understood. I never understand anybody who ever comes up with the argument that they don't want to look at windmills. What do you mean you don't want to look at windmills? I would far rather look at a windmill than look at some smokestacks with yellowish smoke pouring out of them.
Oh, but you see these AstroTurf groups, I mean, it's up against the wall, you redneck mother's time around here, because there is real momentum building out of the Coal River Wind Project, Albert, and the traditional carbon-based filthy energy companies are doing everything, and their allies like CSX Railroad are doing everything they can. You know, they got the guy up in the Friends of the Potomac Highlands who says, you know, we need nuclear power in West Virginia. Okay, buddy, we'll build it next to you. And then you got him in Greenbrier pounding the windmills into the top of the mountains. And, you know, everybody can see them for what they are. We don't want to look at windmills in our lovely Greenbrier County. Our highest mountain peaks with windmills pounded into them. You know, it makes it sound like Paul Bunyan's up there with Babe the Blue Ox and a big sledgehammer just putting up fence posts.
And my God, paint them green, you would never even notice them. It would look like the mountain was dancing or something, you know? That would be gorgeous. Why do they don't have to be white, you know? I mean, now you paint them green, you can barely see them. If you could put them in with the trees, I mean, there's, you know, there's ways. Some of these things are, that, you know, a lot of trees don't reach. Yeah, they're so desperate. And I think everybody sees that, you know, it's, their show is going to be canceled for, you know, nobody's watching it anymore. They're only the freaks. And they're all out there. They're still out there. I know. They're out there. But sense, common sense has this way of just kind of ruling the day sometimes.
When 4,000 when 4,000 gallons of toxic coal goo are on their way to President Obama, somebody's got, you know, you can't not notice that.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not saying that that the Potomac is a lovely and pristine thing. Kind of, you know, seeing it the other day kind of reminded me of how the Romans lovingly refer to their filthy river, the Tiber. They call it the Blonde River of Rome. You know, just kind of, and so, you know, I mean, we already know. I mean, there's a lot of vile stuff being done to the Potomac. The chicken poo alone. And the fertilizers that go in on downstream or upstream, maybe in northern West Virginia and the eastern panhandle alone, you know, I mean, I'm not kidding. There are transvestite fish in the Potomac River. Yeah, you know, they get born male and then they turn female because of all the phytoestrogens in the water. fish with, Bart Simpson fish, the ones with three eyes on each side.
Yeah.
That's becoming a non-rare occurrence. But still, adding coal sludge to that isn't helping.
Oh, well, you got bovine growth hormone, RGBH, and all those other Monsanto-pushed, hormones being dumped in there. And then coal sludge on top of that, you're just going to kill all the creations that you made. And, I got to say, I do like hyperbole, but my God, Monsanto are a bunch of evil, evil bastards.
Yeah, see, that's not hyperbole. No, not at all. It's not even a hyperbole.
They are evil, evil bastards, Bob.
It won't be long before they've got ads on CNN. Monsanto, we've got electrolytes. I mean, I'm sorry. I watched it Sunday, and I've still got it running through my mind, and it just does that.
Yeah. I'm waiting for the Criterion collection of that movie. I think it's coming.
Oh, yeah?
Criterion, they tend to pick those movies like that. Yeah, if you ever see a Criterion collection, just if you're going to buy a movie and you see it says Criterion collection, chances are, pick it up, you're going to like it.
Oh, really?
At least I've always found that. Like, they pick, what are Criterion collection films? There's a bunch of documentaries, all the Akira Kurosawa films, they're all there, but they're the older ones, David Lynch films, Terry Gilliam films with, Brazil and Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, RoboCop, the original one, Techno Terror Dome, whatever that one was, there's a couple thousand of them, they're just all like those little movies that are just good. Anyway, so, yeah, I'm waiting for the Idiocracy version of that to come out.
That would be very cool. Oh, and by the way, a little bit of good news on the green jobs front. I've had the occasion now a couple of times to hear Van Jones speak. He's got a new job, Van does.
Does he?
Yeah. He's got a new job and a new boss. The new boss is Barack Obama.
Okay.
Because Van has been named the special advisor for green jobs. And this is exciting. This is really exciting. I talked to him briefly backstage when I was in D.C. last, and I said, listen, we got to get you guys serious about green jobs in Appalachia, because you can't green, the rest of the country will never turn green unless you start in Appalachia, because it will always have a tarry, coal-colored stain on it as long as you leave us alone to the tender mercies of the coal industry. And he looked at me and said, are you serious? I said, deadly serious. I don't have time to joke about this.
Yeah.
And so Green for All has an envoy to Appalachia. I know who she is. I know her name. She's a wonderful person. And we're going to start busting ass to get this region. And I'm not trying to minimize the efforts in the rest of the country or the need to minimize the cities, to make cities green or suburbs green. But honest to God, if you don't get green in Appalachia, what's the point?
Yeah, no, I agree. No, I agree with you. I agree with you. If you can't, in a sense, you have to go to, the heart. And if, just being the oldest, just geographically being the oldest mountain range in the world, right?
Yeah, there's that.
It's up there. Being the cradle of, life on this continent, and probably parts of it, just sheltered for eons.
Yeah, I was walking through the living room, and they had the History Channel on, and I saw this guy looking at a layer of rock where people were quarrying stone 20, a mile or two inland from the beach, and they stopped when they started seeing what they were quarrying. They were quarrying into an ancient coral reef, and I don't know where this was. I'm presuming it was in the northern hemisphere.
Okay.
But they were quarrying into a coral reef, and the guy said, well, we can tell by looking at this what kind of coral it is, and we know that the kind of coral this is only exists in depths of 10 to 20 feet. So that means this reef was 10 to 20 feet underwater 120,000 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, that's when that's when the glaciers receded and the ice caps melted. You know, like the polar ice cap, like there weren't any glaciers left. Like no, what we're on the way to, you know, people think, well, you know, a six inch rise in the sea level could be devastating.
Well, it was when they, well, there was, you know, you're talking about, just thinking, you know, is it the grand snowball, the great snowball theory, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think so. But the idea that everything, you know, the glaciers receded, everything melted, and the water went way the hell up.
Yeah.
And it went up long enough for coral reefs to form at depths of 10 to 20 feet. A mile or so inland from what is now a coastal area. Because, you know, it take, you know, coral reefs don't just go and grow up. They take a while.
No.
And then it takes a while to turn them back into rock.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, there are ways, for instance, Albert, that we talk about global warming. I don't know if you noticed or not, but there has been a huge convention of global warming deniers in New York City, I guess this week, because it coincides with the global climate crisis, the summit taking place in Copenhagen. And, you know, and it's something we deal with here because of the, well, coal keeps the lights on. I don't believe this global warming nonsense. Oh, and you just, you know, you want to get them by their scrawny, geeky little coal poison necks and go, buddy, okay, let's assume that global warming's all a big fraud. It's a big fake. There's no reality to it. Let's talk about the mercury now. Let's talk about the selenium. Let's talk about the arsenic. Let's talk about the cadmium, the barium, the manganese, the aluminum, the magnesium. Let's talk about all those things that coal puts into not just the water, not just the ground, but into your mama and your wife and your precious baby daughter. Let's talk about that. Let's don't talk about global warming. Let's talk about why we have to keep poisoning your kids. Never mind my kids, because my kids don't matter a rat's ass to you, coal buddy. Friend Nicole, but how about your kids? Are you into poisoning your own children? Let's talk about that.
Well, exactly. It's like, you know, there are points that I hear on both sides of the global warming argument that I can understand and see, and evidence here and there. But the problem with those guys and these deniers is their solution is to do nothing and to burn more coal and to do all these things. Essentially, which, and to me, negates their argument because the entire idea of us continuing the path that we've been is suicide. And I mean, and so, like, the thing is we need to make a change, and whatever that change is has to be somewhat drastic. And for these people to just kick and scream and drag their feet, is, you know, I mean, yeah, right. I'm not totally worried about water levels up 20 feet. I'm worried about nobody being able to breathe the air.
Or well, there is that.
Water. I mean, that's, to me, I think that's more, a much more powerful statement, you know, than worrying about, you know, I understand, and that they, I understand, and that scientists, and it pisses me off every time they do it, they make it dramatic. And they got to turn science into this dramatic thing, and you have no idea of the reality of it. They'll always, you know, with these big tidal waves, and like, you know, oh, if you ever touched the surface of the sun, your hand would disintegrate. And they talk like that, and it's just it's ridiculous because I don't think that's where we need to be looking for anything in terms of we really do have to make changes. Maybe what I'm saying is even just like that, but if we don't do these changes, we're just not going to survive. We're just not. I mean, you know, if we're at the peak of, you know, carbon energy, which kind of, I mean, you kind of think they would have to exist some sort of peak. If we're at the peak of this, we're only going downhill from here. You know, there's only downhill from here. I mean, if we're at the peak and we can't produce the energy based the way we used to produce the energy, well, what are we going to do? Are we going to eat each other?
It's all Gilligan on the bicycle and the coconut-based batteries.
Come on now, exactly. We need to start thinking like that, and that's the problem with them. That's my problem with them, is they think that, you know, like, their argument is so minor. It's like, I don't even know. It's like not going to a restaurant because of the color of the salt shakers or something ridiculous like that. It's like what is talking about is so tiny and insignificant to the bigger picture of that. I think the people that are talking about global warming that they advocate, you know, that they're advocating a system of, you know, and there are some of them that are advocating nuclear. Some of them I think take it a little bit far. That's why I'm not really, you know, I'm certainly on the one side, but I'm not completely on, you know, so far that it's on the other side already. They'll talk about advocating nuclear energy, and that just bugs me because that, that's just so, it's just dangerous.
It's backwards. It's going backwards. Because it still takes a ton of coal-based energy to make nuclear energy.
It does, exactly. And it's an energy sink. It's always on the, you know, it's going for a while. It's cheap, and then it gets, you know, but then again, it's so very expensive in the long run. You would think that there would have to be better ways to extract that energy than the way we do. You know, by generating steam and, like, you would think that nuclear technology would be literally sucking energy out of the atoms and the electrons. You would think that there'd be some sort of way that we could really get, because there's a lot of energy in that material, and most of it winds up spending, you know, the majority of its lifespan not being used as such. It sits there and just does its thing radioactively, buried under the ground somewhere or in some pool. You know, as long as human beings are around to keep that pool filled with water, it won't.
Yeah, maybe we could put it in a sludge dam.
Never ends, does it? That's
no.
Ridiculous.
Because, you know, the coal's radioactive too, but I mean, you know, just saying.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, I tell people that, and, you know, I even hear that, until I heard it and looked at it and didn't realize it. You know, I didn't realize, like, wow, yeah, that really is dirty, dirty, nasty stuff. I mean, God. You know, it's got all that stuff in there, and there's probably, you know, we should leave it where it is, you know, unless we can utilize it and get energy out of it and, you know, emit nothing but water and vapor, that is water vapor or something like that, like hydrogen-based or something like along those lines, you know, unless we can make whatever, you know, byproducts are inert, you know, literally inert, knowingly inert, not like inert like they try to say aspartame, because... But that's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, I don't know. It just, we don't make sense a lot of ways. A lot of the old system doesn't make sense. And, you know, there are always going to be those people that try to protect that crap. And, you know, just based
on... Yeah, well, you know, we started out talking about the Appalachian Power rate increase, which has, you know, very real-world consequences.
Oh, absolutely.
The reason they're now putting out that they need that rate increase... Well, it's got a little bit to do with the price of coal, but now, and now see if you can work through this, Albert, because I'm having trouble with it.
All right.
They're saying that they have to have the rate increase because they're unable to sell electricity to other power plants now. Okay, they say that... the company had predicted it would sell $248.5 million in power to other electric utilities between July 2008 and this June, but those sales have almost disappeared. Okay, just tuck that one away and hang on to it for a minute. Revenue generated from those sales, electricity unused by AEP customers, keeps rates down. So what we're saying, am I to understand here that they're admitting that they deliberately burn more coal than they have to?
I would think so.
Appalachian Power spokesman Phil Moy says, it has dried up. The slowing economy reduces the opportunity for off-system sales. Any profit from those sales goes back and is credited to our customers. Pardon me, and I don't like to use these words very often, but horse shit. I have yet to see an off-site sale credited to my damn bill. It has historically been a big help in keeping our costs down. So, I got a feeling we're being lied to because they're blaming the economy for the fact that they're not able to sell to other power companies. I don't buy it. I think America's waking up, Albert.
Yes, sir.
I think we're seeing some energy conservation because this isn't like not buying gasoline, okay?
No.
This is people turning the damn lights off. You know, the population in this country is still growing. The need for electricity is still rising. But they over, this just pisses me off so much because they overproduced and now we're taking the blame for it.
Yep.
They bought more coal than they needed to generate more electricity than they needed and I gotta pay for it? Oh, hell no. I don't know when this hearing's gonna be, but I by God will be at that hearing. And if I get a half a chance, I'm gonna sit there and ask a bunch of loaded questions of the coal pimps on the panel. Sir, are you telling me that you bought too much coal, that you anticipated you would generate electricity and sell it to people who turned out not to buy it, and now you want to hang it on me and my family? Screw you, buddy. I mean, have I got it right?
I think so. I mean, it sounds to me like they bought more than they used more or consumed more. I don't know how these people think. I really don't. They're just...
Well, now bear in mind, okay, work with me a little more here. Because, again, it's the people of West Virginia's fault through the Public Service Commission, okay? Last year, they haven't had a rate increase for 40 years, so I guess we can... No. They got an 11.35% rate increase last year on a 17% request. Last year, you know, when the recession hadn't hit.
And what do they want now?
And they want 18.5% now. And this guy has the sleazy, the dirty, sleazy gall to sit there and give a quote and say, had the 17% been granted last year, it would have resulted in a lesser percentage this year.
That's the big question.
Car, feathers, rail, this guy, you know?
When was the last time you saw your power bill go down?
It doesn't.
Because the rate went down.
I mean, think, if the Fed, just to extend, if the federal government got behind solar and wind powerizing individual homes, for instance.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Just think for a minute. Do you know what the LIHEAP program is? The Low Income Heating Assistance Program? That's a subsidy that goes out to poor families every year to help them keep the... It's basically corporate welfare. Because it's welfare for poor people that's paid directly to the power company.
Mm-hmm.
You could eliminate the LIHEAP program and save a fortune just by making wind and solar available to the poor.
Yep.
And maybe some of those poor folks could learn how to maintain wind and solar systems and not be poor anymore. Wow, see what a crazy guy I am, Albert?
You're a maniac. You know, maybe there will probably have to be, you know, if everybody has solar panels on their house and they get the manual systems for adjusting the pitch of them, there'd probably be people in the local area that could say, hey, you know, put up a and say, yep, I will adjust your thing for you and, you know, get a small fee from that. And, yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of different jobs that are going to be created. We just have to bite the bullet. This is our sacrifice. This is what we have to do. We have to say, okay, you know, we have to make, I guess, in a way, we have to make our own agreement with ourselves, with the government, and say, listen, we're willing to... You know, over the next, you know, take out a loan. You know, I mean, you know, we're not the billionaires here. We're not going to be able to take out these, you know, buy $1 billion in bonds. You know, that's one of those things. Sometimes I watch these documentaries and I see those old cries for, you know, buy war bonds, invest in your country. Like, to me, I think we should do that again. I think a little bit of that should come in. You know, put bonds out that can help pay for putting this infrastructure out. You know, bond for $100 or a couple $100 here and there, you know, or $100 bond every so often, and, you know, that would go into the energy infrastructure of this country. Why can't we do something along those lines? I mean, you know, you could say it, but at the same time, you know, these people, you go out, you get, you know, you can go Citibank, right, and all these other banks, Wells Fargo and all these other banks, they'll sit there and they'll send you checks in the mail.
Yeah, that you can go cash, okay? Really.
For $8,000, $10,000. $10,000! I just gotta sign my name to this check. Boom, boom. It's mine. It's like, so So if we can do that, and they could charge you an interest, and I think those are like those are handy for consolidation. If you want to consolidate some loans and get your payment down, and you could pay off this $5,000 at their freaking interest rates, you could pay that off, and they're making money on it, probably a lot on it. You could pay that off in roughly 5 years. Okay, at the cost that you're paying your utility bills right now.
Now, see, you're talking about a five-year plan, and everybody knows that five-year plans is communist, Albert. What are you, communist?
Oh, is that a communist thing?
Yeah, that Khrushchev and them Stalins and stuff, they's all the time having five-year tractor plans.
Well, God, you ever said that much?
I know. That craziness is out there. Just to work with the theme I started with this evening, Albert, that craziness is out there because, among other things, Glenn Beck is out there screaming that stem cells are going to lead to eugenics.
Yeah, I knew that his name was coming up. God, he is.
I hate that little pimple. I do.
He is retarded, man.
No, I think that's unfair to people who are retarded, quite frankly.
It is.
This guy allegedly has a fully functioning brain, and he's still a dick.
He's Rabban. That's Beast Rabban right there. He's just filthy.
Okay, building on our previous conversation, then Ann Coulter can be Fade Ralpha.
Yeah, she would be. He would be a good
one. See?
I want to see that put into action. It never happened.
You know what? There needs to be a graphic novel. I wish I could draw.
Well, just imagine it, and someone will do it. I'll tell you.
Yeah, put it out into the universe, so there you go.
Stem cells are awesome. And, I got to just restate this whole argument that they're having. Fertility clinics will fertilize X amount of eggs in a petri dish. They will get them to some sort of zygote stage, the first few days or what have you, and then they either inject them or freeze them. So we have this just wealth of tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of eggs that are frozen that essentially would just be one day, or how long are we going to keep these things on ice? 100 years? Thousands of years? I mean, I don't understand how they can justify, life, we care about life. What life? What consciousness is at that stage? It would just be a tiny little sand of consciousness. Well, what are they talking about, life?
You missed the latest right-wing news release. They put a teeny tiny microphone next to a blastocyst, and they heard it. Oh. We were sailing along on moonlight. Yeah, it was just singing, carrying on, sure. Oh, shame on me.
We should use them. They should be used. It's like use them or throw them into the dump and let the seagulls eat them or something. I mean, you're going to waste them. I mean, so if you're going to talk about God, are you going to say God would want me to waste this technology or that could actually save lives, let people that are, do it. I've seen it done. I've heard the research. I've paid attention to these things back before they banned it. I remember when they took stem cells from some sort of hamster, severed this hamster's spinal column, put this little nanoweave embedded with the stem cells into the spinal cord area. Boom! Next thing you know, the freaking hamster's walking around again. It's almost like a miracle thing. Okay, I remember seeing studies. They've been using stem cells in Europe for quite a while, and there was a man in France who had a heart. He was 89 years old. He had like 7 heart attacks in his life. They did this scan of his heart, and it was all blue, meaning that it wasn't getting a lot of
oxygen. Yeah,
like dead. Right? They took stem cells from his hip. His 89-year-old hip. They took stem cells out, put them in a little culture and in a little needle, took an angioplasty route to his heart, put the little needle into the walls of the heart in certain areas, squeezed some of them stem cells in there, did another scan. He has the heart of a 19-year-old. Okay?
Oh, I know. This thing that Wayne turned me on to a while back, and I couldn't find it on YouTube if I had to, but it's... This guy gets his finger cut off, they put some powder on it, and the finger grows back.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't even know that that stem cell. No, that was fascinating stuff. That was like, maybe that was like stem cells, and they were using an Epson inkjet printer to spray cells on. No kidding. And just making stuff grow back. Hey, Albert, I got to roll on, but what a great conversation, brother.
Always, brother, always. And hey, I think Wayne, Bossman Wayne, should be Gurney Halleck.
Yes.
He's got voice for it.
Yes.
Get him on a ballot set. All right, buddy.
Absolutely. Great call. Great call. We'll have this thing casted before the week's out.
Absolutely.
All right. Later, man. Bye. Okay, who wants to be the shout-out mapes? This is the ongoing Dune thing. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Am I on?
You're on. Hey, Dave.
Oh, so much stuff from that last call.
Albert always brings a ton to the table.
I was just frantically scribbling, you know. I try and do that when I'm on hold. I don't know. The stuff about climate change. Yesterday, I did my usual Monday evening routine. I went off and I did my laundry, and then I went off to the local magazine store. And I bought New Scientist and Adbusters, which I talked to you about last night.
Right.
New Scientist, the cover says Earth, 2099. Population crashes, mass migration, vast new desert, cities abandoned. How to survive the new century. And then I whip over to the next pile of stuff and I buy Adbusters. The headline on the front page of this is End Game Strategy. You know, this is where we are. This is where people who are thinking know where we are. Talking about nuclear stuff. Not one ounce of high-level radiation has been disposed of permanently yet. How long have we been making the stuff? 60 years?
Yeah, roughly.
And nobody's figured out a way of getting rid of this crap. So fusion reactors have to be a no-no. Fusion is fine. Fusion has a lot of advantages. It fails safe. If it escapes its containment vessel, it stops. Where, as we know from Three Mile Island, if it escapes its
or Chernobyl
containment, it keeps going down. It keeps melting. It keeps getting worse. So we have to keep away from fission. We have to keep away from that crap.
You know, when I hear things like that 2099 story you're referring to, Dave, there's a lot of people out there, and all you got to do is Google the Google big die off.
Yeah, well,
and there, you know, there are credible predictions out there that a lot of people don't like that suggest that there is going to be a massive population reduction in the coming century.
Have you heard of James Lovelock?
Yes.
The Gaia hypothesis? A couple of weeks ago, two, 3 weeks ago, again, in New Scientist, there was an interview with him. And he said, his thing, and he's been saying this since the year I was born, 1955. And I remember he was on an interview show on the BBC, and he said, the Earth can sustain billions. What does that mean?
That we got seven times as many people as the Earth can sustain?
Five to six, yes. And so this is a huge problem. And given that my belief is that the only thing that really matters on the planet is human life, that for me is the thing that you can't step on, you can't mess with. That, for me, is the most important thing we have. So that's a scary thought to say that, you know, we have to get rid of 5.5 billion people to make it so that the ones that are left can really keep going.
But, you know, there is some, I don't even like the philosophical trail that leads down.
No, I don't believe me, I don't like it.
There's evidence for it in human evolution, Dave. Some paleo scientists have posited that at one point in time, humanity
7,000 people.
got down to 2,000 people somewhere in Africa. That's it. Yeah. That was us.
And that's coming again.
And over the course of, what, a million years or so, it took a million years to get from 2,000 to...
Way too many.
To 6 or 7 billion. That's...
Now, one of the things that I find right now is around all the stuff that's going on with numbers and the money thing, is that if we fix, and I use the term fix, in the sense of a horse race, if we fix the economic system that exists right now, that guarantees the destruction of the planet. And so, for me, even though I know it will be an unpleasant time, I hope the whole bloody thing melts down. Because that's the only hope there is for people, is that the whole thing tanks and that people finally, finally wake up that that's going to take. It's not going to change with politicians because politicians are short-term thinkers. Politicians are self-interested thinkers. We need people in place who are making policy that doesn't only care about themselves.
Or the next election cycle. You know, you never know where you're going to find the kind of thinking that will change the way you think. I remember being in college many years ago. God, longer than I back when I wrote a dinosaur to school.
Don't even go there.
I know.
You still.
Yeah. But reading some writings of Robert Frost for a paper I was researching, and his comment, and, you know, this is back at the early part of the 20th century, or maybe the midpoint at best, and his remark that politics can never solve the essential problems of humanity.
Yes. And all that requires is you to look at the whole damn thing logically. You know,
or even poetically, as, you know, as Frost proved.
Well, politics really, politics is just a way of trying to control and trying to maintain some form of sense, I think. That's what it should be. But unfortunately, what's happened in the world of politics is that the people who want power, and I can't remember who's, but the people who want power are the very last people who should ever be given it. I don't know where that comes from, but that is absolutely bang on. Because the only people who want power are the ones who want to control you and me. And something that I've always had, and I've had this since even before I was a teenager, is you have no right to try and control me. Just like I have no right to try and control you.
Yeah, I'm the same way with authority, Dave.
I've always thought that.
You know, people have always said, "Well, you know, you've got to respect him. He's got you got to at least respect the office." I got told George Bush, among other things. Or
the office should never, ever be respected.
Right.
No, ever, not once. Because that leads down a really unpleasant road, and we're traveling it right now. You know? There's so many things, there's so much stuff that right now you've got sea level rise. And I don't know if you've seen today on the BBC that scientists are saying that sea level rise is going to be way worse than the climate people are already saying.
Yeah.
This stuff is just so beyond frightening. Sprawl is an issue. You know, we talk
if
about
that. Yeah, if you're near any kind of a major body of water, somewhere down the road you're in trouble.
Well, I can see Lake Ontario from where I'm.
You're in trouble.
That's right now.
You're in trouble.
I know.
The people that I know and love who live near an ocean are in trouble. Now the question is, if everything I've read is true, it's not going to be a precipitous rise. It's not going to be, you know, one day it's out at the beach and the next day it's on your doorstep. No. It'll be more like what the Venetians have seen over the course of 600 or 700 years.
You can't do the Canute thing and sit on the shore and say no, and that's a bit of a fallacy anyway. I don't think
right.
he did that. Sat there. I
think that's apocryphal.
You know, but you know what I mean. The thing about all of this is it's happening. And you were talking earlier about during the Ice Ages, the North Sea. It's really interesting when trawlers go out in the North Sea and they trawl really close to the bottom. They pull all kinds of interesting things up from the bottom of the North Sea.
Right. Well,
Neanderthals and the animals that lived then.
Mm-hmm.
When Europe was connected to Britain by a land bridge because the water was lower.
Right. Those are all known things.
But if you look at back to the when the Earth had a carbon dioxide level in its atmosphere that we're at right now, it's frightening. It really is. You know?
Yeah, and you have to ignore a lot of stuff to be a global warming denier. I mean, you have to ignore, among other things, the archaeological record. I've mentioned a number of times this core study in Greenland.
Even if global warming is only 50% human, if global warming is 50% caused by people, that means we have to do twice as much, not ignore it.
Yeah, that doesn't buy us 50% more time to fix it.
Absolutely.
But that's the mindset that obtains that.
Twice as fast.
What I was going to mention a minute ago, from the earliest days of the Roman Republic's discovery of silver in Spain, okay? They deforested the entire Iberian Peninsula to run their forges to deal with to refine their silver. Okay, that carbon from those fires in Spain shows up in ice cores drilled in Greenland.
Well, it was because your last caller was talking about North American Indians living in harmony with nature. That's a fallacy. It really is. There's a lot of evidence that climate change started 10,000 years ago with humans.
Well, certainly human populations have done themselves out of where they live. The Mayans did it. The people.
That's one thing they have a real good skill in.
The people of Rapa Nui did it. All this stuff is documented in Jared Diamond's brilliant book, Collapse.
Yes.
So there were those who did live in harmony. There were those who didn't. Another, the Anasazi culture, the American Southwest, deforested their region.
Yeah.
Did themselves right out of civilization, and a rather brilliant one at that.
So one of the things that we have right now that people back then didn't have is the ability to try and understand the whole system. And everything, all the evidence points to the fact that the system cannot sustain the number of people on the planet and their lifestyle. Now, I'm not trying to say, aren't I wonderful? Don't get me wrong here. I saw the logic of this argument when I was 12 years old, and I'm 54 now. I remember distinctly in 1967, the Yom Kippur War, when people were saying, but the economy's going to cease to grow. But the economy's going to cease to grow. And I can remember, I can see it like a photograph. My dad coming home from work, and me saying to him, you know, I've been thinking all day about this, and it's been bothering me. They keep going on about the economy's growing, but the thing that I can't understand is the earth isn't getting any bigger. The world's getting no bigger. So how can economies continue to grow forever? It can't happen. And that disconnect with the world happened to me 42 years ago. And I've been fighting like mad for 42 years, ever since I saw that, to get people to see. And I still do. I'm really hard on my kid if they leave a light on. I say, are there any eyeballs in that room using those lights? Switch the damn things off.
Right. And
right now I have no lights on. I'm sitting in front of a computer screen. Why do I need lights on? They're all off.
Sure.
You know,
And that's what puts the lie to this this sort of ex post facto justification from my power company down here.
Oh, power company. Don't even go there.
The slowing economy reduces the opportunity for off-system sales. Any profit from those sales goes back and is credited to our customers.
Profit. Let's bow down to the god profit, shall we? Do you think we should have prayer mats and point in a particular direction?
Absolutely.
Bow down to the
profit? Yes. I don't know what would be the...
What direction do we point in?
Wall Street?
No. I could never bow down and face Wall Street. They should bow down to anyone who has announced the sense. They should bow down. Because they are the problem. The mentality of these... I'm on the radio. These evil F-blank-blank-K-E-R-S.
Yes.
Is the problem.
Crazy pluckers.
And I sometimes feel like just standing on the roof and screaming my lungs out at the madness that I see around me. That's how I feel on a daily basis. You know, I've not spoken to you for a while. I was in the UK dealing with issues of my parents who were old and infirm, and I was gone for quite a while dealing with that. And just everything I look at just makes me want to scream. In the UK right now, they £1.3 trillion given to banks, but my parents need health care, but they can't get it because of no money. You think that makes me angry? My dad is suffering from stuff that happened to him when he was put in harm's way during World War II.
Yeah.
That's his big issue right now. And to sit and watch him trying to get the help that he needs from a government that put him in the state that he's in and have him denied that, you think I'm angry? I don't think anger covers it. You know? And I'm just beyond angry. Angry doesn't cover it anymore. It really doesn't. And frustration is just too mild a concept for the way I feel about what I see every day. That's where I am right now.
And
I try to make my kids realize that right now, they're living in a world that cannot continue. And I'm trying to prepare my children for the world that they're going to have to deal with. It's not a pleasant one. It really isn't. And
the only way it can have any pleasance to it whatsoever, Dave, is to prepare them. Every last one of us. It's like our pal Nanette says. Sit down and teach the history of our old people to our children and arm them mentally to deal with the future.
So that's what I do.
Because this is a feed, and you know what I mean by that. This is a feedback loop, Dave.
Oh, don't even get me going on feedback. Look at the climate and feedback loops. You know, as the climate warms, it melts permafrost, which produces CO2 and methane, which warms the climate, which produces warming of the place, which produces more CO2 and methane from all that permafrost that's going to melt, which, you know.
I know. Yeah, we buy more land to raise more corn, to feed more hogs, to buy more land to raise more corn, to feed more hogs. Exactly, yeah. Robert Frost again, incidentally. No, that's Carl Sandburg.
Well, you know, you just look at the world with an ounce of logic and your brain melts.
I know.
You know, and like I said to you last night, the reason I listened to you, and what made me keep listening to you, you get as angry online about stuff as I got angry about stuff offline. And you don't sit there and be nice about it.
How can you, Dave? How can you? How can you look at this stuff and maintain it? I realize, well, you know, professional journalists don't scream into the microphone.
Then it's about time the profession changed.
There you go. You know, this business of being dispassionate about disaster, I guess there's a place for just laying out the facts there and leaving people to...
You're not part of the disaster. But unfortunately, the disaster we're looking at, we're all part of, so you cannot be dispassionate about it.
There you go. It's the facts extend beyond the four corners of the news story, Dave. The facts, and I think this is what happens to me. The facts extend into my life. The facts extend into the lives of those who share precious finite time to listen to this program. If they want a talking bobblehead, Chicken Noodle News is there for them 7 days a week.
No problem.
Yeah, there you go.
But this is the problem, though, for you and me. The people who understand, the people who have gone out there and found information for themselves, looked at it logically, and said, holy shit. Pardon me.
I'm sorry.
They're the people who have got it. Money is debt. I know I've talked to you about this before.
Right.
I have given away now 26 copies on DVD, people, to try and wake people up. I will try and beat information into any head that doesn't run away fast enough. I will. And people say to me, oh, he's off again. And that's their way of avoiding dealing with it. But whenever anyone says that to me, I think, I'm just going to work a little harder on you. I'm working in some, under the hood, you know, I'm trying to do stuff and wake people up on the quiet, just on a one-on-one basis. And I ask people really difficult questions on a regular basis. At work, where I work, there's 12 people. They all have a copy of Money as Debt. And four of them keep saying, oh, yeah, I'll watch it one of these days. And I keep saying, watch it this damn weekend, will you? But everyone who has watched it has said to me, wow. That kind of changes the way I look at the world. And my approach to this is, if I can change two people, and they change two, and they change two, and they change two, therefore have exponential growth. The interesting thing about exponential growth when we're talking about the environment is that if you believe you can have exponential growth on a finite planet, you are either a madman or an economist.
And those two may actually converge and coincide.
You think?
Yeah, I know. Hey Dave, thanks so much. Thanks so much, brother. You bring a ton to the table, and you know, keep getting the information out there. Keep talking to people. You know, whether you've got a disc in your hand to hand out or not, Dave, the fact that you talk to people is probably the single most valuable part of what you do, because we live in a society that has enforced silences built into it.
My approach to all of this is, if you think I'm mad, what the hell do I care? You're wrong. If I'm the last sane person on the planet and everyone says to me I'm mad, I don't believe them. I don't believe them. So I have no issues around that stuff.
There you go. Dave, have a great evening, brother.
You too.
Take care.
I'm doing what you're doing.
I will do. Later.
Bye. Bye.
And I'm going to roll on. I hope the lights that are still blinking have people behind them. But a little piece of breaking news provided me by our blogger, Texas Betsy. News coming in from South Alabama. At least 5 people were shot and killed today in Geneva County, Alabama, The suspect, Sampson, Alabama Police Chief Gary Weeks, says the suspect was shot and killed. ABC News reporting it's unclear whether it was self-inflicted or whether he was shot by police near the Reliable Metal Products Company outside Geneva. Geneva being near the Florida border in southeast Alabama. Population of about 4,400. Neighboring Sampson has about 2,000 folks in it. Still awaiting a statement from the Alabama Bureau of Investigation. Background info from ABC. Reliable Metal Products makes grills and vents for heating and air conditioning systems, mainly for hotels. Reliable is not saying anything. And I suppose it's unfair to speculate. But even Arlen Specter, whom I would not trust with a dead skunk, even though people call him a moderate Republican, Arlen Specter came out today and said, this is a depression. I guess the homicidally insane one has always with one. But it's hard to see that a shooting took place at a manufacturing plant and not at least wonder if this is part and parcel of the world that George W. Bush bequeathed us. Five people shot and killed, including the gunman. We don't know why. We don't know much more than, we don't know anything more than what I've shared with you. But I saw photographs yesterday of Bushvilles, tent cities springing up around the country with people living in them who used to live in houses. We're at a point where the right wing can no longer say, well, them homeless people, and you know, you've heard it. My friends, the homeless like to be homeless. My friends, they are the mentally ill. They are drug addicts, and they prefer to live on the streets, my friends. You know. Well, it appears to me that that right-wing excuse is fast going away. And as I noted earlier, either we build this green economy or we swirl down the toilet. I hope we choose the former instead of standing still and simply letting the latter transpire. I'm not kidding when I talk about the sleazy, tawdry things that are said about homeless folk. It's astonishing the level of hate that's out there. Breathtaking levels of hate. When you consider, for instance, that creepy man that I just mocked, He is a world unto himself. When it comes to evincing loathing for people who struggle in this world. Just a couple of days ago, this junkie, Limbaugh, was on the air. Oh, why is he talking about him again? It ain't about him. It's about the people. And granted, they're not the 20 million that he says. It's more like 4 million and change a day, and usually the same 4 million, and only about half of them agreeing with him, so 2 million. But 2 million people a day can can make a difference if they go out and they share those rantings, like the crazy bastard in Oklahoma.
I won't have no liberals in this class.
This goes back to late last week. Michelle Obama appeared at a homeless shelter and was photographed. And in the photograph was a picture of a man using a cell phone to take a photograph of her. Well, you've heard the right wing before. You know how they are. My friends, and I've heard this, my friends, we have the wealthiest poor class in the world. Our poor people have several televisions in their home. Color televisions, my friends. Well, now he's got a new bête noire.
Fact is that there's a great picture out there. Michelle, my belle, Obama, once again sleeveless. Was it Time Magazine or Newsweek did a story this week, maybe the New York Times, on how you too can have highly toned arms like Michelle Obama.
Yeah, God knows
after
you don't.
After the State of the Union show, a bunch of stories now, you too can have highly toned arms and get rid of the, whatever they call these lab things under there.
Like you got?
Wings, whatever. There's a picture of Michelle Obama at a homeless shelter in Washington. She's on the other side of the glass, you know, where the server would be serving McNuggets at McDonald's. And she's serving food to the homeless. And the homeless and the poor are showing up taking pictures of her with their cell phones.
The nerve! How dare they!
First of all, it has to be an opportunity to mock Michelle Obama actually engaging in serving humanity. You know, Pickles was too busy, you know, calling Lupe to bring her another, you know, another Darvon and a margarita. They go so well together. Yeah, a Bush would not be caught dead in a soup kitchen.
Yeah, I just saw the picture. We'll put it at RushLimbaugh.com. This is the poor and the war on poverty. What we have, ladies and gentlemen, is a giant welfare state that's in the process of being manufactured that the Democrat Party will preside over forever.
You sleazy bastard. We already have a welfare state, and you're on it, Flush. You and your corporate cronies are all over the welfare state. But you know that. Corporate America is the biggest recipient of welfare on planet Earth. It's when actual people who have struggled and been broken on the wheel of crony, crass, oligarchic-based capitalism, it's when those people get a little something, a bowl of damn soup! Or when one of them has the nerve to have a cell phone that is that person's only lifeline. That is offensive to this puzzle-gutted, drug-addled bag of gas and flesh.
Because everybody or enough people are going to need the goodwill of Democrats in power in order to get by. Like, you're going to have to see the First Lady behind the counter at McDonald's when you go in there as your poverty-stricken day drags on, take a picture of her with your cell phone while you go in there and get your McNuggets.
Now, you get that? She was at a homeless shelter. And in the course of a matter of seconds, this lying gas bag has turned it into a McDonald's. Seamlessly.
What's that, Marlene? You mean the poor people are getting to go to McDonald's because the Democrats are paying for... My God, Marlene, the Democrats are paying for poor people to eat at McDonald's now. It's communism.
or whatever's being handed out that day.
Yeah. Cell phones literally, and just because you've got a cell phone doesn't mean you were able to, you know, because you got to pass a credit check, and anybody who's done this knows this. Got to pass a credit check and national security and all this stuff to get a stinking cell phone. A lot of people have prepaid cell phones. And they don't have computers to download the photographs to. But you're poor and you're broke. You're in a soup kitchen! And the first lady shows up and she's doing something fundamentally decent. Far more decent than anything a Bushwoman has ever done. And that's a topic fit for derision? I do derision. I know derision. But to make fun of... I guess I subjected that horse's rear end in Oklahoma to some much-deserved derision earlier, because it's the poisoning of the well that people like Flimbaugh and Beck and yada, yada, yada have done to America that leads to people like that, the Kel Wolf creature in Oklahoma. I don't teach the liberals. Obama's the Antichrist. Or leads, in fact, to, leads, in fact, to Chuck Norris, who I suppose is 69 years old today or something. He's now saying that there exists a network of thousands of right-wing cell groups that are going to rise up and create a second American revolution, and he's going to be the president of Texas. He says, as far as rising up is concerned, that need may be a reality sooner than we think. If not me, someone someday may again be running for president of the Lone Star State if the State of the Union continues to turn into the enemy of the state. We've bastardized the First Amendment, reinterpreted America's religious history, and secularized our society until we ooze skepticism and circumvent religion on every level of public and private life. How much more will Americans take? When will enough be enough? And when that time comes, will our leaders finally listen, or will history need to record a second American Revolution? Hey, dumbass, that was called the Civil War. This will be the third one, okay? Just saying. We, the people, have the authority according to America's Declaration of Independence. I hate to clue him into his buddy Scalia, but, you know, Scalia says that ain't law, the Declaration of Independence. But I'm not surprised because, you know, Flush Flimbaugh doesn't know the difference between the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. A week or so ago, that dumb bastard quoted the Declaration of Independence and said it was in the Constitution. And all his little dribbling-mouthed, open-mouthed, fly-catching, knuckle-walking ditto heads, that's right there in the Constitution, boss. But the masturbatory fantasy that Chuck Norris has, thousands of cell groups will be united around the country in solidarity over the concerns for our nation. And guess what? He's hawking something, of course. March 13th, 5 p.m., the right-wing cells are all going to meet during a live telecast called We Surround Them! And then he quotes Sam Houston. We view ourselves on the eve of battle. The racism and eliminationism is literally beginning to eat these people's brains out. Kipton, it was terrible. They put things in our ears. Mama. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
I'm from Brooklyn, of course.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. This whole welfare, social, it is white supremacy.
Yes, it is.
The term welfare has become synonymous with black people in this country.
Yeah.
What? It has. Okay, and this is what they're using to fool these idiotic working class whites who, again, because I'm white, I think I'm better than you mentally.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, this goes all the way back to Ronald Reagan creating the myth of the overweight black welfare queen getting out of a Cadillac to go pick up her food stamps and her check for having babies.
Well, you know what? Had he let that continue, maybe we wouldn't be in this economic mess that we're in, because at least they would have been buying Cadillacs.
Yeah, no kidding. Very true.
You know, because, again, it's all white supremacy. Chuck Norris is just pissed off because Bruce Lee used to kick his behind all the time.
They're filled with hate. It motivates them. It gets them through every day, Kevin. This hatred.
Yeah, and this is why I have.
I don't know how you live like that.
Well, I couldn't live amongst them. So why do you think I'm back up in New York?
Oh, I know. And I mean, you know, some gun nut in Oklahoma that won't teach no liberals how to handle it. Trying to throw a 13-year-old and his father out of a hunter safety class? I mean, I thought these people, you know, anybody who wants to shoot a gun, we're behind them. You know, the Second Amendment.
You know, it becomes stupid and sickening now. It really does. And the thing is, you know, you can't eat your gun. Because half of these fools don't even know how to go shoot a deer anyway.
Yeah, no
kidding. A lot of this gun ownership is just, you know, shorty extensionism, if you know what I mean.
I do know. And I, like I said, at the beginning of the program, Kevin, they count on that split second when you turn the lights on and you see all the roaches, they count on that split second of you going, to scurry away.
Yeah.
And they scurry.
A lot of this wealth, you know, because and Joe Scarborough does it every morning. Every other word that comes out of his mouth in the morning on his cup of Joe is welfare and socialism.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it all comes down to basically, you know, and the whole, again, it's all white supremacy. Even non-whites like Bobby Jindal or Americans Can Do Anything nonsense. We don't need socialism. You know, I heard a similar line like that during World War II when Hitler told the German army, well, you're the Aryan race. You know, you don't need warm coats to go march into Russia in the wintertime. And look what happened there.
Yeah, that worked out real well.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing is, we use public monies to build roads, Kevin. We use them to build water lines and sewer systems. We use them to change the structure of cities. We use public funds to prop up the mega farms and corporate farming. We do. There's all kinds of socialized socialist, if you will, programs in this country. But it's when we start talking about some sort of alleged socialism that could actually benefit working people, that's when the hissy gets thrown. It gets thrown on issues of poor people getting, you know, a chance to do better. It gets screamed, socialism gets screamed when we talk about making sure that sick people, any sick person, can go to the doctor. That's when they have their fit. They're okay with the rest of the socialism.
Well, the thing is, God forbid if working people accumulate wealth. And that's why this booming economy continues, because you know what? You're not supposed to accumulate wealth to the point where you're just as good as them, if not better.
Right. That's the definition and the nature, Kevin, of the class war.
Yeah, because I'll never forget when I, years ago. Now, me, I have a thing for good shoes, and I tend to spend top dollar on shoes every, like, once a year, or now it's like every other year.
Yeah, my dad always told me that if you buy cheap shoes, it's the one article of clothing where you will get what you pay for.
Exactly. So I shop at Church's English Shoes on Madison Avenue, and they have one in D.C., you know. So I ran into a former boss of mine there, and he made such a stink about it.
About you being at the shoe store?
About me, well, me being able to buy Church's English Shoes.
He resented it?
Yeah, he resented it. And this is what the class, because that's where he gets his shoes. He makes probably 3-4 times the salary I made, because he's like in the, you know, 200,000 range. And, you know, here's this, you know, employee making, you know, whatever, you know, 1/4 of his income. He's doing buying the Church's English Shoes. And it comes down to pettiness like that. And, you know, he didn't say it like, what are you doing? No, he'd go, oh, yeah, Kevin can buy, you know, and he'll make a note of, he'll, like, tell somebody else, oh, yeah, Kevin can buy, you know, some of the best shoes, best made shoes in the city, you know.
Right, because that obviously means you're being paid too much.
Exactly.
And that's, what a perfect example, Kevin. What a perfect example.
God, you know, God forbid if you treat yourself to a first-class flight every now and then. You know, I have a friend, every time she goes on vacation, once a year, she likes to go down to the island. Every time she puts in her paperwork, because her boss, probably too cheap to go outside the country, he ends up only going to the Jersey Shore. You know, she says, well, I'm going away, and he'll say, well, if you go away, don't come back. Thank God she's so unionized and all that. What, you know, because New York City Transit is mostly union people.
Right.
Where they can't really do anything. She's entitled to go on her vacation. And what you do on your vacation, supposedly, is your business.
There you, yeah. But, yeah, don't have too much fun.
Exactly. So, you know, it all comes down to that kind of pettiness, you know. God forbid if a working class person, you know, somebody who doesn't quite exactly make six figures.
I mean, for God's sakes, the spokesman, the titular head of the Republican Party, Kevin, resents someone having a lifeline, you know, a prepaid cell phone.
Well, this has always been the plot of conservative individuals in any given society, to isolate them and keep them half-starved.
Yeah. I mean, this guy's got a Gulfstream jet.
Yeah.
He's got a 26,000-square-foot mansion that he shares with a cat. And he begrudges a homeless person a prepaid cell phone.
When he was on welfare himself.
Sure he was.
You see, that's a little tidbit that nobody seems to mention. But, you know, he'll say how I rose myself up off the bootstraps and all that. If anybody's living the Republican mandate, it's me. Okay, because, you know, I'm going to share something. Technically, if it wasn't for, you know, me being able to move back into, you know, the brownstone house I grew up in, I don't know where I'll be. Because, you understand what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Basically, after my divorce, I walked away from my house. Which I could have got half on.
Just to get, yeah, just to be done.
Yeah.
Now, I do understand. And
so, you know, and, you know, thank God for my loving mother. She was like, you know what? Come home. You have your privacy. You know, I know you're a bachelor and all that. This is your house. And the way brownstones are, it's basically like having a lot of them have been converted to apartments. So,
right, yeah.
You know, so and that's the Republic, because thank God my family accumulated some sort of wealth. That, not that we're...
No, yeah, in the form of home equity, sure. It's
yeah, that it can be done.
And there's a lot of people who didn't and don't have that safety net. I understand.
Exactly.
But that's okay. America's problem is America's working and underclass. Our problem has nothing to do, Kevin, with the greed-mired Wall Street bankers. No, they're not. No.
No, you know what America's problem is? Basically, greed and racism.
Yeah, and what they are intertwined. They are clearly intertwined.
Yeah. And that's always been the history of America.
Yeah, Kevin, I've got to run along, but I'm glad we got a conversation in toward the end of the program.
Okay, then have a good one.
All right, take care. Bye,
okay, buddy.
Our buddy Kevin calling from Brooklyn. It is time to wrap things up for the evening. Be back tomorrow night, I do believe. There is a reception down in Charleston for the West Virginia Environmental Council, but in light of the fact that I missed so much time last week and will miss a couple of shows next week, I think I'd better be here, so that's where I'll be. I hope you will as well, because after all, tomorrow night is also prayer meeting. You wouldn't want to miss prayer meeting. I mean, lightning bolt might get you or something. So thanks to the hardest working, most overworked man in liberal talk, Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Nothing comes through your computer speakers that hasn't first passed through the servers of WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben never sends a bill. Ben needs all the help he can get. So does this network. But I want to throw something out there because he hasn't been on the air for a while, but that doesn't mean that he's not coming back, and it doesn't mean that he does not have profound needs, and he does. And that's Guy James. If you've got a little something laying around, Guy has needs that need to be met that I will not go into except to say that they have a lot to do with his ability to come back to the air. So there's a PayPal button, I think, at theguyjamesshow.com. Learn it, know it, use it. I stay in contact with Guy, and I can't wait for him to get back behind the microphone. We need him so badly these days. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, coalriverwind.org. There's big change afoot, and a lot of it is being accomplished by the grassroots efforts by the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, standing upstream and fighting for all of us, because we are all downstream. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you.
The president wants to spy on 200 million Americans without a warrant. Has he read this document which he was sworn to uphold?
Now, I will not have you libel Abraham Lincoln.
I don't understand the problem with registering guns. We register cars.
Mark Levine brings you the news the government doesn't want you to know.
Today, an explosive story about connections between white supremacists and Islamic terrorists.
When there's a conflict between Scalia's conservative values and the Constitution of the United States, he throws away the Constitution.
We do have secret prisons. That is not what America's all about.
Let's go to Mark in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Every week we discuss the issue of today and give you a chance to call in and express your views. And today, I'm going to discuss what's on your mind. Yes, I can read your mind, because it's on the mind of every American. Indeed, it's probably on the mind of virtually everyone throughout the world. It's the economy, stupid. Sorry, didn't mean to call you stupid. That, of course, was the phrase used in Bill Clinton's war room in 1992. It was a way to remind the people working in the Clinton campaign that the economy was first and foremost on people's minds. That every other issue, while people care about abortion or gun control or other issues of the day, foreign policy, in economic stress, the economy is first and foremost in Americans' minds, no more so than today. The Dow dropped to its lowest level in 12 years today. We also, of course, have a dramatic increased number of foreclosures. Unemployment is up above 8%. And Congress and the President are working very hard to fix the problem. But what is the problem? What is the solution? Democrats and Republicans are already on each other's throats arguing about that. So I thought I'd bring a little of that down home for you. I brought my guest, Mike Lane, frequent Republican guest. He's a Republican strategist, the president of Intelliphant Strategies. And he and I are going to discuss what ails the economy and, more importantly, what we can do to fix it. Because, honestly, it's a lot easier to talk about what's wrong with the economy than what it is and how it is we can fix the economy. Mike, welcome again to the Insight Scoop.
Mark, thank you for having me back. I look forward to it.
I'm going to give the number out right at the beginning because I really hope our listeners will call in. The economy is a very complex thing. It is on everyone's minds. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275, locally 571-749-1166. Mike, the Dow has dropped, but frankly, we've been in trouble a lot before then. The unemployment level is high. President Obama has a wide variety of plans, everything from stimulus package to specifically a homeowner package. I think it's realistic to say it's going to take some time to get us out of the economy. We had a long time getting in. It's going to take some time to get out. Is that fair?
Well, I don't think anybody expects it to come back in a 24-hour snap. But let's go through a couple of things. First of all, no matter how many times President Obama wants to say, hey, I inherited this economy, and I think I've counted them saying it at least 329 times so far.
Is it not true?
Well, the fact is, it is now his economy. He may have inherited it, but it is his economy, and it's his to fix or make worse, and he's been making it worse. Primarily, I think, through three things. Number one is talking down the economy. More times than he says, hey, I inherited this economy, he said, this is not going to get better right away. You know, this is going to take some time. It's going to get worse before it gets better. And when you talk the economy down like that, you take away investor confidence and things just keep going south. Because a lot of things are built on expectations, and he has done a yeoman's job in lowering everybody's expectations to the point where people have zero confidence in what he's doing. The second thing, and we'll get into this in a little bit more detail, I'll just mention it, is I think the street is talking with their dollars about their confidence in his recovery program. The market's down 4,000 points since he became president. I think, you know, the votes are there. It's gone. He's just not doing the job. The third thing is, I don't think the average American person thinks that what's going on is really the solution to it. I think that they think everything is a little bit of an overreach. Too much of this, too much of that. They're wondering why it wasn't just stimulus instead of every little thing that Obama could come up with to throw in there. And that's why we have a lack of confidence, and with a lack of confidence,